show. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Years and 3 days, and Agnes and I are still married. We got through the weekend. Hot diggity. Nothing really special going on. Just another quiet weekend on the God's Little Acre. And awfully tickled to be starting a brand spanking new week. The first full week of May is upon us. It's acting like spring outside. It was a lovely spring afternoon. All the green. This time of year, the green is just especially green, isn't it? It's bright and it's brilliant and it's inspiring of how green we can make this world if we so choose. And if we only have the will to last one more day longer than the profiteers and the corporate polluters and the mind thugs. It's up to us. That's ours. It's the choice we make. So, let's see. Program note. It's program note time. No, don't go to the lobby and get a Coke. It's time for program notes. Just to let you know, a rare and wonderful opportunity is coming your way this Thursday evening. I'll be traveling with the tribe back down to... Institute, West Virginia, among other things, not far from the highest concentration of incredibly deadly methyl isocyanate, the same poisons that wiped out Bhopal. But I'll be traveling down there not to go to the Bayer plant at Institute. No, I'll be traveling to Institute, West Virginia, to go to the West Virginia State University. There is a little bit of irony in the fact that... In the Kanawha Valley, a traditionally white upper crust private college sits directly across from the state capitol, while a few miles down the river, a traditionally African American institution of higher learning sits next to the most humongous stockpile of some of the most deadly poison on planet Earth. Just saying. It's kind of like Michelle Bachmann the other day saying, well, you know, I just find it coincidental that the last swine flu outbreak happened on a Democratic president's watch under Jimmy Carter. Only problem, it didn't. It happened under Gerald Ford. Will whip inflation now. But no, this is true. West Virginia's traditionally African-American institution of higher learning, West Virginia State University, sits almost smack dab on top of the one of the single greatest agglomerations of one of the most deadly poisons on Earth. I personally think they should rename Institute West Virginia, and we need a clever politician to do this, rename Institute West Virginia Bhopal West Virginia. Then maybe somebody would notice. The lady I met recently, a delightful young woman by the name of Maya Nye, is out there busting her hump, trying to get Bayer to get the damned methyl isocyanate out of her home. And I'm awfully proud of the work that she's doing. There's no good reason. If you can't stockpile that stuff anywhere else on the planet, there is no damned good reason whatsoever why you should be able to stockpile it on top of a bunch of hillbillies. I mean, really, what a slap in the face, what a spit on your shoes moment that is from the fine folks at Bayer. You know what I mean? Yeah. So anyway, just Bob did it again. He started filibobstering.
Oop.
No, that wasn't what I was talking about. Program note. The whole tribe and I, because this is a very special event, the whole tribe and I will be traveling on Thursday down to Institute, West Virginia for the Seneca 2 lecture series. Our dear friends down there, Evan Knapp, Malika, and Malika Knapp-Smith, and the whole Seneca 2 crew are hosting a delightful human being whose words I cannot wait to hear. They are hosting, as I said, a delightful human being, and yeah, I'm a guy, a beautiful woman. Huh! Not quite as pretty as my Agnes, but pretty nonetheless. And see, I can say that she's not even in the room. I'm not even scoring points. That's how I really feel. Elizabeth Kucinich is going to be in Institute, West Virginia on Thursday. And so is the horn. We will be carrying the proceedings live for you. And one of the things that makes this so special, I work most closely in this with Malika, and she is a wonderful human being, and she gets it. Wow, does she get progressive radio? Wow, does she get the need for distance closing and isolation eliminating? And so she always makes sure that she lets me know when Seneca 2 is going to be hosting an event. And I can't wait to be there this Thursday. I can't wait to be there this Thursday because with me there this Thursday, that means you're there this Thursday. You can hear what Elizabeth Kucinich has to say live. Now, here's the fun part. If you want to join us in the chat room, head on radionetwork.com, the headonradionetwork.com/chatroom. Free, easy. All you got to do is bring your smiling self. It doesn't matter where on the planet you are. You can get your questions to Elizabeth Kucinich. What do you think? You can send them via email. You can send them via the chat. We will, in turn, write down questions and pass them to the moderator, who will then ask them of Mrs. Kucinich. How cool is that, as the young people say? I think it's pretty doggone cool. So I'm looking forward to it. She'll be talking a lot about peace issues. I, for one, intend to make peace a hillbilly issue. Because while it is utterly necessary that we get out of Iraq, and it is absolutely necessary that we get out of Afghanistan, and completely and totally necessary that we not repeat those mistakes ever, 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 ever again, I would just hasten to point out that not making war on one's own people is a big part of peace as well. I would hasten to point out that more bombs, more high explosives are used on West Virginia and Appalachia than Iraq or Afghanistan. Yeah, after all, we get approximately every 8 to 9 days, we get our very own little Hiroshima. We get that much high explosives used on us in Appalachia. So peace begins at home, and I doubt very seriously that Mrs. Kucinich will be inimical to that idea. I imagine that seeing what she has seen in the world, it will be an eye-opening experience for her. With any luck at all, there will be time perhaps to take her to Caford Mountain and let her look out at what the rest of America lets corporate America do to Appalachia. I hope. And another little thing to throw out there for you. John Fox just told me a moment ago he'll be cross-posting it at headonradionetwork.com. But if you go to dailyyonder.com or commondreams.org, you will find a little attempt at writing on the part of yours truly. And I hope I hope it's something you find worthwhile. I've had a lot of really nice comments about the piece. The title is "Making a Sacred Zone in Appalachia," and I would welcome your thoughts. Comment on either blog. It started out at dailyyonder.com. Those are great guys, keeping it rural. And ever since I found out about it through the good offices of our dear friend Jeff Biggers, I've become a reader. Just all kinds of cool stuff about life in the country and high tech in the country and what is being done to the country. So wander on over and have a look at that. You know, if I'm not careful, this could very easily turn out to be sort of prayer meeting 2 days early. Not my fault. This stuff just sort of happens out there into the sort of zeitgeist. Samuel Joseph Weasel Booger Backer Bocker, whatever, Joe the Not a Plumber, Joe the Scab, has opened his mouth again. Proving once again that he does not understand the old aphorism that it is better to remain silent and be thought a fool than to open one's mouth and prove it. This time it's gay folk he's after. Oh, what I wouldn't give to hear Peter Godbold let loose on this guy, but I will do my dead level best later in the program. Also, taking Jesus to the Afghans, thanks to another intrepid listener, our buddy Dennis. I got audio for you from Al Jazeera, and I don't think Al Jazeera will mind me running this audio for you because, well, frankly, it's not like you can watch Al Jazeera in the United States on your cable system. You can watch 19 different TV preaching hucksters sending prayer cloths and, the sweat stains of Jesus if you'll just send a little donation. Yeah, all of that you want. A little actual reporting from a different point of view? Sorry. I mean, damn, Al Jazeera may just as well broadcast with a big old hammer and sickle for its logo. What an amazing degree of censorship we deal with in this country, especially a country that prides itself on being, free. How free are you? You can't even watch Al Jazeera on your cable TV box. I like to watch American Idol, Bob! Did you see that? And that woman from Scotland, did you hear her sing? No. And I refuse to, by the way. Thanks to those of you who have recently friended up with me on Facebook. I accept everybody coming and going who wants to be pals on Facebook, and I'm trying to get better about just posting updates and Twitters and tweets and so forth out there. You know what? I need structure. I need to just sit down and make a schedule, 9 a.m. tweet. Noon, tweet again. 2, tweet some more. And in the middle, try to get through, but tweet, 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 tweet. And maybe even bite the bullet on the what's our buddy Dave in Canada call it, the government tracking device that passes for a cell phone. Bite the bullet on the cost for that and just start tweeting from my phone and make things a lot easier. But, no, it's an interesting day. Creepy stuff out there. The Secretary of Defense is in the Middle East. He's hoping to allay their concerns about U.S. talks with Iran. We'll figure out what that means maybe somewhere along the way. And yes, democracy in Afghanistan. One of the former warlords who, among other things, may be may be partially responsible for the hot dose that kills some kid in an alley in New York City tonight, or, you know, Topeka, one of the Afghan heroin warlords, is going to be number two, maybe number two in the country. He's made it onto the ballot. Not just any ballot, he's Hamid Karzai, our man in Kabul's running mate. Charming, ain't it? Another so-called senseless slaying of a husband killing his wife and children. In Florida, of course, and the usual statement from the county sheriff, this in particular Polk County Sheriff Grady Judd, it is beyond my understanding why a man would shoot and kill his 5-month-old baby boy, his 7-year-old baby boy, try to kill his 13-year-old son, shoot his wife, and then turn the gun on himself. Not beyond my understanding, the Sheriff Fife, I mean Judd. I know why. You just live in Florida, Sheriff, and you're not allowed to say why, because, well, we'll get to that. And I guess right now or in the recent past, President Obama has been speaking at a Cinco de Mayo event. And call me crazy, but ain't it still, even in Mexico, ain't it still Cuatro de Mayo? Just asking. But all of that takes second place. All of that takes a back seat to your phone calls. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey.
Hey, Juanita.
I'm trying on a different phone.
Okay.
I don't know how it's coming.
It's a little crackly, but we'll get through it.
Well, I'm not going to be on long. I wanted to talk to you about the other day. I talked to you about that ad with where they're showing one of Obama's campaign clips about coal.
Yes.
Have you seen one yet?
Yes, I have.
Well, I noticed, I saw it yesterday, I noticed again, and I noticed that they had edited it. It makes it look like, according to their editing, that coal is going to offer 5 million jobs. Doesn't it look that way to you?
It does, and in fact, I've got a jobs coal story that David in South Carolina sent me that's just going to rock your socks off. I guess they're going to provide some jobs, but where they're looking to get them from is, oh, you're going to have to giggle.
But, you know, I didn't notice it the other day. I saw it so many times, but I haven't watched so much news or anything this weekend, and I thought, oh, I see. They think they're trying to make people think they got 5 million jobs to offer them.
Because the coal's going to last forever.
Yeah.
We got a coal factory. We're just making more every day. Only problem is it takes about 50 million years to cook.
And you were talking about the family killing. That's about 15 miles from me.
I thought that was near your neck of the woods.
Yeah, right? You know, he chased that boy.
I know. He shoots his wife, he shoots his babies, and then he goes chasing and shooting his son down the, what, out into the yard and into the road?
He already killed his wife and his baby and another, I think it was 3-year-old. But we've got a lot of, we've got a lot of, like, the northern, Southern Alabama, you know, the Panhandle?
That's just South Georgia and South Alabama. That's.
And they brought up about, I mean, they're even showing their arrest records, both of them. I mean, I thought it was a little below the line, but anyway.
Is it a real sort of redneck bed and breakfast kind of thing?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, I mean, we've got it spread all over the place. I know Ken lived down in this area. I don't know if he lived in this central Florida or not, but he knows. I mean, they're all around.
Yeah.
But it's really sad. It really is sad.
It is, and it sort of dovetails with that story. Another headline: ammo hard to find as gun owners stock up.
Yeah.
There's an ammunition shortage, you know, because of crazy white men in Florida chasing their 13-year-old sons down the road with high-powered rifles, Got to lead them a little bit. Well, oh, jeez. You know, it's just evil.
You know, Chris Rock, he said that what we needed to do was make the ammunition cost a fortune. But they've done bought it up.
They can't make it fast enough.
I'm not. Huh?
They can't make the stuff fast enough.
Oh, no. Mm-mm. They're scared to death. Going to be taken away from them. Now, wouldn't I get me a gun, and I don't know how to clean it, and I don't know, you know, how to work with it, but I can, you know, just have it.
Yeah, well, you know.
I've had it one time before.
Yeah, it's kind of like having a fish, you know. You don't have to know nothing about keeping fish. You just get a fish, and you know, the only problem is the fish will die if you ignore it long enough. Sooner or later, however, that gun in your house going to hurt somebody.
Yeah, but I don't know if it was down here or not. You probably heard about the girl that she was, these two guys tried to mug her. I think she was a teenager, and she had a baton, and she beat the tar out of them.
Beat them like they owed her money.
Yeah.
Well, you know, when batons are outlawed, only outlaws will have batons one day.
That's right. Well, how's Agnes today? Is she feeling better?
Yeah, she's feeling some better. She's watching what she eats. The doctor took away her beloved chocolate, and that's just not going over real good. But took away her caffeine too, so she's sort of running slow, just like me. You know, I've been decaffeinated for 13 years now. I could be a Mormon if I wanted to. Yeah. But she's feeling considerably better.
Yeah.
And you know, she survived 3 days into our 16th year of marriage.
Into what?
Our 16th year of marriage. You know,
when was that?
Well, our anniversary was on Friday, and this is Monday, so we're 16 years and 3 days in. And still kicking.
They say down here some. What?
I said, and still kicking.
As they say down here sometime, congratulations.
Yeah, congratulations. Yes, indeedy. Thank you very kindly.
I got some little bitty corn coming up.
Do you? Did you plant?
I'm having a time with my seeds, especially my tomatoes. I think I'm just going to get some plants.
You know what? I've never had the patience to raise tomatoes from seed. I just you got to start in January.
I got my squash.
And you're going to have your squash, yellow crookneck.
Well, I got about three different kinds now. Trying, but I had them coming up, but they died out. The first ones that came up, and some little tomato plants that have come up, but don't look like they're growing. And but I saw my little corn, and I got cabbage coming up.
A hot dog.
I got pretty much everything, but I did have some spinach coming up, but it looks like it's dying out.
Well, but, you know what? It may be too hot for spinach where you are already.
Well,
spinach likes it cool.
Started early. But, oh, you think it's too hot?
Really? Yeah, spinach really does. You know, your English peas and your spinach and turnips for either greens or turnips, you want to get those in the ground when it's cool. Yeah.
And I got some of the cutest little string beans coming up.
Oh, goody.
That's my biggest plant.
Yeah, that'll be a nice mess of beans later.
And
in the
I grew some I'm growing marigolds, you know, to try to keep bugs away in a natural sort of way.
Yeah, and you know what? They work.
Yeah.
They absolutely do.
Okay. Well, I'm gonna let you go, and I try to find. This is one of those things where you call long distance, and I tried to find that number, and you just got it blank on the site now. You know the long distance number instead of the 877 number.
Well, now that you've said this, I'll bet you somebody's going to be on top of it like a duck on a June bug.
Yeah, it's got it like the parentheses there, and then the number. Maybe I'm on the wrong site. Every time I log in, I seem like I get something different.
Well, hopefully it'll straighten out because you know there's a lot of work.
But
going
I'll be
on.
Looking forward to that with Elizabeth Kucinich.
Well, be ready, have your question, shoot your question in to us, and we'll make sure she gets we get an answer.
Well, I'm sure you know a lot of the questions that we need to ask. So if we don't get to, that'll be fine. I'll be listening. But I hope she does go and see what's happening. The more voices out there, the better.
I agree.
The more truth tellers.
There you go. There you go. Well, Juanita, you take care.
I got to ask you one little thing.
Sure, sure.
I was looking through my emails, and I noticed I sent you one that somebody had written in about that fox lady.
Yes.
Her lady. Lady. Jerry Lewis says lady.
Lady. Yeah.
Yeah. And somebody said they were trying to call on this people responding to an article about her, and somebody said that was an insult to trying to call her a she-man, and said it was also an insult to boxes. Did you remember that?
Yes.
It
was a nice giggle.
It was cute.
It was,
yeah,
indeed.
Here. Calling Representative Fox a she-male is an insult to the transgendered, much like calling her dumb as a box of rocks would be an insult not only to cardboard packaging, but geology as a whole. Isn't that good?
That's wonderful. That's wonderful.
Oh, boy.
And we need those little giggles, don't we, Juanita?
Huh?
We need those little giggles.
Oh yeah, I love those things. People
well, get out there and get the and have nice clean clear space for your corn to get a fighting chance in.
I'm gonna have to find a place where the birds, you know, I'm gonna have to protect it from the birds and the cats and everything else. But I'm gonna do my best.
Electric fences, Juanita. Electric fences with a solar charger. That's the way to go.
Yeah. We've got some neighbors got corn coming up, so maybe my corn will come up.
I hope it will. And I can't wait till it does, and you can tell us how good it is. There's still time to get planting done yet, and I'm trying to figure out a way to get my hands on a tiller, because if I don't get my garden in this summer, I'm going to have a fit.
Oh, yeah, me too. I really want something, you know. Okay, well, you take care.
All right, you too, Juanita. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
That's our View correspondent, Juanita, from Central Florida. Yeah, when I say I want a garden, I've got a square about 100 by 150 by 150, and that's what I want covered up in garden. And so I don't think the little garden mantis is going to do it, and I got to figure out a way to get a new tiller since the other one grew legs and walked away a couple of summers ago. This can't go on. Plus, it's a good way to get my large, trundling, pale bulk out into the sunshine, get a nice little sunburn on me. Yeah, that's good for me. But sweat a little bit of me away from me. Much to be said for taking advantage of the warm weather to make a little less bob. Let's keep it rolling and see what's going on. By the way, speak of the devil, there is Horn intern junior grade Ferg walking in the door now, shirking his duties, having missed the first 28 minutes and 45 seconds of the program. But anyway, we'll go to the phones and find out who's there. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Bob.
Hey, Luke, what's up?
Oh, you know how it is. Just sitting back watching the news channels and all this, just kind of going, where they get these people from? I swear.
Yeah, dig them up from under a rock, maybe?
Oh. Well, the one I'm loving today was Mr. Cafferty asked the question about Jeb Bush on one of his three questions for the, you know, at the end of the hour.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked through the whole list, and I think I saw maybe one or two things that was in favor of him, about 300 that were against. And, you know, it's like I wrote in, and I gave him one simple line. I didn't get it used, dang it. I said, I just have two words to say about Jeb Bush, Terry Schiavo.
Yeah, you know, let's let him wear that for the rest of his life.
It's one of those things. When he stands up there and talks about he's wanting to be a moderating part, just remember, this is the same Jeb Bush that was going to send the Highway Patrol in to take the woman out of the hospice, except for the fact the county sheriff said if you do it, you're going to have a gunfight on your hands.
I was going to say, and maybe have a gun battle with the county sheriff.
And just remember, this is also the same Jeb Bush who appointed some lady named Catherine Harris.
Oh, yeah.
To the job. You know, and just remember, that's where it
all
started.
So maybe four words for Jeb Bush: Terry Schiavo and Catherine Harris.
Well, you know, it's like a while back, Buzzflash was having their thing, you know, about who was the worst of the GOP, and they got it down to the end of it, and it ended up being the Dark Lord himself. But the one I picked was they picked the gang of one of the that came in second was the Gang of Five, and I said you got to lay it with them because without the five of them, none of it would have happened.
No, that's the truth, you know. And Sandra Day O'Connor, I want it chiseled on her headstone when she goes on to her long home and her just reward. I want her headstone to say "Screwed America."
Well, the one thing that's been getting me this weekend was everywhere you turn, there was Eric Cantor or Jeb Bush or all them talking about rebranding the GOP. And I'm sitting there going, you know what? I'm sure that one of John Stewart or somebody will do it, but I had an idea. What they need to do is put them together a nice little commercial, about five minute infomercial. I say we start off with Miss Virginia Fox, we go to Joe Barton, Marsha Blackburn,
and then Michelle Bachmann,
and then we finish it up with a gift that never stops giving, Michelle Bachmann. I mean, I
don't know. You could probably work some Samuel Joseph Weasel Booker Bagger Booger.
Oh, I know, but just them, because at least those are the official ones.
Yeah, true.
Like I say, I went over to that Bachmann watch. It's hilarious. It's one of those things. I mean, you sit here, you heard the new one now about the Hoot Smalley Act, didn't you?
No.
Well,
Stuart Smalley's passing legislation, and he's not even in the Senate yet?
No. She got complaining about the Democrats passing in the last big depression, you know, in 1933. Passed this thing called the Hoot Smalley Act. Put all these tariffs on.
Ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States, Hubert Hoover.
Well, then they kind of pointed out to her that, first of all, it's not Hoot Smalley, it's Smoot Hawley. And it was 4 years before FDR took office.
And it was a Congress?
A Republican Congress.
Yes.
And Hawley were both Republicans.
Yes, but they would be Democrats today. Because they weren't pro-life.
It's just one of them things. That's what I said. She's just the gift that keeps on giving. You know, it's like, say, when you think that you can't say nothing else stupid, it's like, stick the microphone under her face. This will get interesting. I have faith.
Well, yeah, she's a comedy act.
You know, well, the thing about Michelle Bachmann.
I mean, if you didn't know better, you'd think that Michelle Bachmann was one of the, was a character from, you know, Spinal Tap or Waiting for Guffman or the Best in Show or A Mighty Wind. I mean, she's that over the top.
Yeah.
I mean, she's Christopher Guest material.
You're just kind of sitting there looking at her going, huh? You know, and I'll tell you what, if anybody had never got a chance to, because I know C-SPAN hadn't replayed it as far as I know, you know, like I say, you need to go back and look at the testimony when Al Gore was speaking before the House. Marsha Blackburn got up there, and the question she asked, by the time she finished asking it, most of the audience was laughing. You know, I mean, she was in one of them things that just right, left, and center, and you're just sitting there going, is this a question?
I know, and, you know, and she's from your home state.
Oh,
there.
Yeah, don't, please, I know.
I mean, I'm not rubbing it in or nothing, but can you explain to me, or maybe perish the thought, but she may actually be David in Tennessee's actual Congress critter.
She's supposed to it if she ain't. She's over in that, more in that area than.
And I'd like it explained. I mean, and I know that neck of the woods. I mean, what's wrong with people? They send her to.
Well, it's like the thing up there in Minnesota. You're sitting there going, how did this woman win re-election?
Do you think, Luke? Is it possible that voters are more cagey than what we know? And they send people like Marsha Blackburn and Michelle Bachmann to Congress just to get them the hell out of their districts?
It's one of those things you got to wonder if the Democrats went together and just kind of said, you know what, if we put her up there and put her in there, boy, we won't have to worry about Republicans for a long time in this state. But about 2-3 terms of hers, and there won't be a Republican be able to be elected a dog catcher.
You can't help wondering, can you?
Well, you know, it's like the thing with Joe Barton. Joe Martin goes into this long-winded thing complaining about not having the facts and the numbers and all this stuff in it. And Mr. Gore says, it's there.
It's in the paper.
The Times.
Yeah. It's in today's paper, Joe.
If you had read more than just the headline.
If you'd read more than Beetle Bailey.
Hmm?
If you'd read more than Beetle Bailey or Family Circus, you know, those right-wingers just love the Family Circus.
Like, you know, I think they just look at the headline and go with that, and they don't realize that the people who wrote the article most times don't get to write the headline.
No, there's a guy who's got a whole separate job writing headlines.
Yeah, that's an editor usually who writes the headline. But, you know, well, let's see, the boys down there in Nashville, in Texas, the one I still love and I still think the best comment I ever heard about a congressman was still the one Molly Ivins did that one time, had the guy down there in the Texas legislature, said if he loses a couple more IQ points, we're going to have to start watering him. So there was some congressman down there in the state legislature that she'd known for years, and he was just the thorn in his side. But you know what I mean? It's one of these things that, you know, they're out there crying about this rebranding and all that. And it's like, hey, somebody needs to just sit there and remind them, look, y'all can hide Sarah Palin and Ron Paul and all them up in the attic like a crazy old aunt. But guess what? They're going to show up eventually. And I said, you know, y'all can sit there and talk about it. You know, pretend like you're real nice and thing. But just remember, these are the exact same people who now deny that W was one of them. And just remember, these are the people that were standing behind him all the way going, yeah, we're right behind you. Until he lost favor. Then all of a sudden, who are you?
Yeah, all of a sudden can't get the party invites anymore.
You know, it's one of those things where it's like, I love it when they cry. He wasn't a neocon. I said, let's see now. He was working with Dick Cheney and Rumsfeld and, you know, you just go down the list. And it's like, well, if he wasn't, he was in a wonderful class. You know what I mean? He's sitting there with all the rest of the neocons, and they're all just cheering him on, going, we love what you're doing. Yeah. Now all of a sudden it's like, oh, no, we were totally against it.
Like, yeah, who? What?
I haven't washed my brain this week. Thank you.
Yeah. These are not the neocons you are looking for.
Yeah.
It's the neocon mind trick.
It's like, I'm sorry, you don't look like Alec Guinness. No. You know, it's one of those things. It's like,
the neocons never leave. Never leave tracks in the sand when they walk.
Yeah. One thing off topic. Did you get the thing I gave you sent about Cafego?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I did. In fact, we got a little just down Route 19, not too far from where I live here. There's a Cafego Road.
Well, so I say he was a great guy. I got to meet him a couple of times when I was younger. He's a hoot too.
Well, you know, coming from here, and basically was the father of the kicking program there in Knoxville, right?
Oh yeah. I mean, after he's actually retired, he still worked as sort of an off the books coach. He didn't get paid or anything. He just came over and worked with the kickers. I guess he was professor emeritus and all that good stuff.
Yeah, coach emeritus and
yeah. Yeah. So he was both. You know what I mean? So but like I say he was you know, from the old days of Neil Clabo and the Colquitt family, you know, and all that.
Oh, the entire Colquitt family owes their existence to George Cafego, don't they?
Oh, yeah. Craig and Dustin and I can't remember the other two. But you know what I mean? Like you say, the whole family, I mean.
Well, it seemed like there was a new Colquitt at Tennessee about every other recruiting class.
Well, they took off for about 3 or 4 years before then the sons all started showing up. So that's just the way that went. But like I say, just remember, like I say, that's what the new thing is now. They're gonna try on the GOP. They're gonna try this where they've been trying to rewrite history.
Yeah, but see, they kind of got their what passes for brains in their sad little noggins handed to them today because they went out on their first tour. Luke.
Yeah.
You know, Eric Cantor and
Jebby
and the Mitt. I'm sorry. Willard Romney.
Mm-hmm.
They go to a pizza joint in Arlington, Virginia.
I saw the thing over on Crooks and Liars.
Yeah, and there's the pizza shop owner. You know, you'd think there was a friendly audience or something. And Ed McKee owns the pizza joint, and he says, "How are you guys going to help me struggle to deal with health insurance rates? They've gone up 34%." And you know what the answer was?
Tax cuts?
Yeah, that and crickets. Beep. You know, with the Indian headdress and the test pattern. Beep.
It's one of those things that's like, guys, you have to accept you're going to get asked these questions. You better have some answer, even if it's not a good answer, ready.
Well, and that's the thing. I mean, I've got the audio here. I'm not going to go to it. But Eric Cantor, this crazy little neo-maxi-zoom dweeby from Northern Virginia, takes off attacking the Canadian and British health care systems. That was his answer for how I'm going to help you deal with 34% rate increases in your health care plan, was to attack Britain and Canada. I mean, you know, that's right on par with, you know, attacking Iraq over what, you know, that I did on September 11th.
Well, I'm just always happy that we didn't attack Iceland. We could have just as easily.
Well, I'm sure that given a half a chance that Eric Cantor hates the Icelandic healthcare system too.
I know. Yeah, it's just one of those things. It's like, you know, like you say, you're just kind of sitting there going, guys, you at least got to have something. It may not be a good answer, but you got to have some answer other than just saying we don't like what they're doing. It's like, well, fine, what's your idea? Don't get sick. It's okay. I mean, you know, if you want to get into health prevention, great. We can talk about that. But, you know, but don't just, you know, like you say, just stand there like a test pattern. I mean, it's one of those things where we're like, oh, God. You know, it's like, guys, any answer is fine. Dead air is not a good answer. You know, just,
yeah.
But that's where they're going to be. I mean, you know, like you said, you know, it's like we said, you know, if it can't be explained away with a tax cut or increasing the military budget, I'm sure that I'm sorry, we can't help you on that. No, we have no real ideas on that. No. And I mean, it's sort of like, guys, I'm sorry, I could put on a tape loop that could do better than that. You know, but, like I say, I still think somebody ought to put together a commercial, a little 5-10 minute infomercial, and tell you about the real face of the GOP. And like I say, people like Cantor and Bush and Peyush and all them, they need to also remind people of their highlights of their lives too.
Yeah, like refusing stimulus money for unemployed Louisianans, but trying to hustle money to the New Orleans Saints.
Oh, well, you heard the new one was on Cantor. Where Cantor, of course, fought this thing tooth and nail, but apparently something that's coming out of the stimulus package, he's claiming credit for. Can't remember what it was. It was somewhere up in that area.
Pure brass, no shame, yeah. You know.
It was something, maybe it's a road project or something like that was coming out of it. And, of course, he was the one responsible for it, even though it's in the stimulus package he voted against. You know. But like I say, hopefully somebody, like I say, will turn the light on him and we'll see him crawl back under the cracks in the floor. Well, bud, I'm going to let you go on, and I'm going to head on to the house. So you have a good evening.
All right. You take it easy, Luke, and we'll talk soon.
Bye. All right.
Bye now. East Tennessee correspondent Luke. And just to keep things rolling, hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Brother Bob.
Brother Albert.
Boy, oh, boy. I got a four-letter word for Bush that erases them from history, and it's Bush, whatever that is, you know, the other way.
Yeah.
Bush. I mean, come on now. I mean, you know, I mean, give me a break. These people, I mean, that the dead air, all that stuff is just that is the test pattern. That's what they're getting from the universe. That's why they have no ideas. They're not allowed the.
Well, you know, but let's be clear about something, Albert. They've never had an idea. I mean, and I'm talking about never, ever, ever the Republican Party. Even the abolition of slavery was other political entities' ideas that they cabbaged onto as a means of grabbing a contested split up presidential election.
Certainly, they're parasites. That's why they rail so hard against anything else that they perceive as parasitism or whatever. You know, I mean, they're just parasites. That you know, they want. Oh, you know, what you, did you see? Now I just got to say. You know Jeb Bush is starting to gear up for president. You know he's going to be. You know he's thinking about. He's doing. He's been thinking about it, and that's. I think his brother's just totally seen him out of that. But you try to see him. I did watch. I took one for the team, and I watched, and I tried to listen to this guy. And you know, not for nothing, man. He's a kinder, gentler version of good old George. I mean. You know, that's how he's perceived. He's way smoother than George ever was. And it's a little bit, you know, it's a little bit nerve-wracking because, you know, he's really, I think, you know, in terms of name recognition and everything else, he's really going to be who's their shot. You know, I mean, that's, they're going to go for him.
This is the part of the program where I remind people that at the 2004 Republican convention, you know, the conservative convention, the ConCon, and they were doing the ConCon in New York City when people on bicycles were getting rounded up and, you know, held in indeterminate detention because of their, I don't know, dangerous pedals. Anarchist bicyclists. It flashed. I remember it because I saw it. It flashed onto the camera for like 10 seconds, and it was almost like some sort of subliminal messaging, because the minute it came up, you know that there was some producer in the crowd or back in the truck going, "Get it off! Get it off! Go to the woman in the stupid hat with the purple Band-Aid on her face! Get it off!" For about, like, just a flash, split second. There was a photo of somebody holding a Jeb 08 sign. And so, and you know, we've got the words of hateful old bailout Poppy Bush out there saying, "I'd kind of like to see my other boy be president."
Mm-hmm.
Babs would be just tickled pink. They talk about it among they're in those highly competitive croquet matches they have in Kennebunkport.
Yeah.
You know, the ones where W chases his dad with the mallet, Daddy. You know. That is in the works. And you know what? He's the guy in 12. Because there is one thing that the Bush family always counts on, and usually not detrimentally, Albert. The Bush family always counts on the incredible facility of the American people to forget about what a bunch of dirt-eating scum the Bush family are. Because, you know, we got rid of him in 92, Bush won, and there by 2000 is another Bush sitting there going, I'm ready to serve. And the American people went, well, dang, he is!
No.
And a minority of them voted to make him president, and then five thugs on the Supreme Court said, capital idea.
I don't know if we can go back that far. We've come too far already. It'd be like driving up to Wisconsin to go to the store down the road. I mean,
I'd like to see Barack Obama just gut stomp a Bush. It would be delightful.
No doubt. And, you know, making fun of Cantor. Cantor's a joke too. But, you know, making fun of the Canadian and British healthcare system. What the hell planet does this guy live on?
Well, what kind of moron is he? Because it works for a lot of people. Ways that it doesn't work, that our system doesn't work for the majority of Americans.
The stress factor alone probably saves more lives, you know, in smaller countries. You know what I'm saying? Like, when you don't gotta all the worry about all these, I had to go to the dentist. Nah, no cavities. Brush your teeth with soap, people. Anyway, don't get it on the middle of your tongue, whatever that place is called. My friend Dave, he's listening. He knows what it's called. But anyway, some Latin term. Soap. You know, it's gross. But anyway, so, you know, I still had to pay this bill, and not for nothing, you know, $100 here, $100 there, you know, that kind of stuff adds up when $100 don't go nowhere. You know, I mean, $100 goes nowhere. I got to say, boy, it'd be nice to be able to go to the dentist. And that was the first time I've been to the dentist in over 10 years. No cavities, brush teeth with soap. Anyway, you sit there, not flavored, not zest, you know, get a nice natural soap.
Yeah, you don't need the deodorant, no.
Yeah, no, just something natural, almond or, I know it sounds gross, but you don't taste it as long as you don't get it in the middle of your tongue. Now, you know, I sat there, you know, that. I would go to the dentist. More people would go to the dentist. They'd do more preventive. I mean, the way you get preventive health care is you get people to get checked out more often. So they could sit there and monitor, you know, blood levels and, you know, enzymes and all the other stuff that needs to be checked out here and there. Oil changes. You know, to me, that stuff makes sense. But insurance company, they don't work like that. They're idiots. They'll sit there and tell you, oh, yeah, we'll replace your washing machine that costs $900, but you have to have that exact one. Oh, don't worry about it if it costs $900 to ship it. We'll cover that. But you can't have this other one that's $200 more because, you know, it's an upgrade.
Oh, see, I'm dealing with a little something like that right now, Albert, and you know, this being a show that's computer-driven, people might sympathize. So we've got this laptop, okay?
Okay.
And laptops have to be plugged into the electric for their battery to charge.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think the wire to the little plug unit that plugs in has a short in it, because if you wiggle it, it will either charge yes or not charge no.
Okay.
So I called the manufacturer and said, you know, look it, just cross-ship me a new brick instead of me sending this to you and you wasting man hours taking the computer apart to tell me that what I already know to be the problem is the problem. Just cross-ship me a new power brick. You know, the little power supply.
Yeah, no big deal.
Oh, no. We can't do that. You have to box up. Make sure you take your password off from the sign-in, or else we won't do the... Dumbass, you don't even have to turn the machine on. Just send me the... So now I'm at a crossroads, and I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to toddle over to my local magistrate court. And I'm going to, and I recommend this tactic for anybody who has, if they give you one problem in the warranty department, don't tell them you're going to do it, just say thank you very kindly, and toddle over to your local small claims court and file a lawsuit against that corporation. Now, you'll have to do a little homework to find out what their address and everything is and their proper corporate entity. But file a lawsuit against them for the jurisdictional limits. For instance, the jurisdictional limits in our magistrate court is either $5,000 or $10,000. Sue them for that much and pay the service of process fee and the filing fee. And then when they say, no, we want to do it the way you wanted to do it the first time through, you say, no, you already had that opportunity and you forced me to this. So the price, awesome. So now the cost is a new machine.
That's awesome.
And meanwhile, you're out $100. You're maybe out 30 minutes of your life because they got the forms over there at the small claims court.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to cost them $2,500 in legal fees to even get it looked at. And it's not like this is a fight you were looking for. It's like me. I called up. I said, you know, I'm a reasonable guy. I'll send you this one. You send me one. Mine will go out today. Yours goes out today. And I'm not out the use of the computer somewhere because it's part of my business.
Exactly.
Yeah. Oh, no, we can't do that. Why can't you do that? It's against company policy. Who writes company policy? Put me on the phone with them. I can't do that. Well, escalate me. I'm the manager. So, but yeah, whether it's a $900 washing machine or a, you know, this thing cost them $5.
Yeah. Oh, exactly. Exactly. They probably got so many of them, they go and dump them in that big plastic cesspool in the middle of the Pacific.
Yeah, I mean, you know, now it's possible there's a problem that it's possible that the socket itself inside the computer has gone south. And if that's the case, I am going to have to pack it up and ship it because, you know, it's and I understand that. But I'd say the likelihood of it being the wire is something like 99-1.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you hold the socket still and you wiggle the wire, it does the thing. And having learned at the feet of the master, namely the world's most fabulous IT professional, Peter Godbold, I'm pretty confident in my diagnosis.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand, you know, it wasn't the guy getting $6 an hour answering the phone in City of Industry, California. It wasn't his fault. It's some guy who wrote the return policy. Oh, we don't cross ship. What do they think, Albert? That I'm trying to make a sideline business out of fraudulently collecting power supplies for laptop computers, and I've got some little black market thing going here in the hills of West Virginia?
Seriously, I mean, it's like, you know, you'd expect that kind of service from a brick and mortar store. Not an advanced, you know, technological masterpiece that's finding you the best deals and at the same time providing you with the latest technology at, you know, pretty decent speeds. You know, you would expect them to embrace, you know.
I would expect exceptional service.
Exactly. I mean, exactly. And you know, I went through a couple rounds with them guys. You know, and they always, it's like I tell my kids, you can do things two ways. You could do it daddy's way or the hard way. And, you know, when it comes to daddy in this conversation, you're the customer. What the hell happened? I mean, they're the customer being correct. Listen, I think this power supply doesn't work. Can I just switch that and make it faster? Boom, boom, boom. Yes, sir. Here you go. Boom, boom, boom. What does it cost? What is it? What's the big deal?
Well, see, you know, and there's a classic case in point. Dean Baker points this out today over at Truth Out in an essay there. Dean Baker, God, what a smart guy. It's called Dean Baker, and it's over at Truth Out, truthout.org. Dean Baker, Outsourcing Top Management, The Lesson of Fiat Chrysler. And, of course, it's the same kind of thing that we're talking about here, Albert, because what's coming out of the Fiat Chrysler thing is that, well, the UAW has bent over backwards time after time after time after time. The UAW workers are good workers. They build the cars that they are told to build.
Yep.
So you can't really blame the workers for failures of forward thinking and design. That has to land on management's shoulders. In particular, after the buyout from Mercedes-Benz, because see, this is how hedge funds work. Just to digress for a minute, and please bear with me. Mercedes-Benz sold off Chrysler, and they sold it not to a publicly traded company, but to a hedge fund, a venture capital fund called Cerberus Holdings.
Yep.
Now we all remember who Cerberus was.
Yes, indeed.
In a high, lofty corner office of Cerberus Holdings, there is a door with a plaque on it that says, Mr. Quayle.
Ooh, figures.
I'm not kidding.
Yeah.
Former Vice President of the United States, I'm going to Latin America, wish I'd studied more Latin, Dan Quayle, potato with an E, Dan Quayle. Is one of the senior members of the group that damn near killed Chrysler. All right, any questions?
Yeah, none at all. That's hideous.
I mean, we have been for, you know, several years now, a changing paradigm in the automotive world where we're going to hybrids, we're going to plug-in hybrids, we're going to clean biodiesel, yada, 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 yada. What's Chrysler and the boys from Cerberus building?
Well, it's the 2009 Giganto Behemoth. Gets 5 miles a gallon and carries 3 passengers very comfortably.
Now with 5% more Hemi.
Yeah, exactly. For a double, it's a Hemi double D for a double dose of its Hemiing.
That's right. Oh, good.
Which they spell thusly.
But you know, and this leads me, if I may, this leads me into another aspect that I want to talk to you about, and it's this mentality. You know, Dick Quayle, you know, he can't spell, but he can make a buck. You know, they know how to squeeze and decipher and dissect and part out, and you know, chop shop Chrysler and chop shop America and chop shop, you know, everything, and turn, you know. We got this, we don't know if it's going to happen yet, or maybe this year, maybe next year, maybe when flu season hits, when we'll have to actually wind up really dealing with H1N1, the really nasty pandemic type of flu virus, right? Where is it coming from? It's coming from the ethical treatment that we give our bacon, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And see, that's one of the, I noticed over the weekend, Albert, and when you said the H1N1 or H5N1, yeah. I noticed over the weekend the marketing outcry from the pork industry, America's other white meat. Quit calling it the swine flu, would you? You're killing our business. And of course, lo and behold, so I look at CNN and I look at ABC and I look at all the for-profit media. What do I find? Suddenly they're calling it the H1N1 flu, and swine is gone. So as far as I'm concerned, the only way to balance the fact that they're going to hide where it comes from is for me to call it the Smithfield flu. Because it started in a filthy sea of blood and gore and guts and fecal material and, oh, man, the pesticides and, oh, nasty.
Cannibalism.
In Perote, Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
All because Smithfield Meats would have lost, you know, a penny on the share on its quarterly profit and loss statement if they'd actually tried to deal responsibly with that vile excrescence.
Well, didn't the origin of the strain actually come from a farm in the United States? From them, Smithfield?
Yes, it did.
Farm?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. You know, and you know, that brings you off a whole other aspect of it. You know, all right, so obviously they give these animals antibiotics in their food. You know, they get a Jetson's diet of each other and then pills. What happens when this thing becomes, you know, resistant? You know, I mean, we look at it, man, it's just unbelievable. See, this is why, you know, you don't blow up mountains. You don't put 80,000 animals in, you know, 100 square foot, you know, electrified fence area. You don't do that to human. You know, you don't do these things because, you know, just like you made a great article about, you know, making Appalachia a sacred place. You know, but the whole planet is a sacred place. You know, without this whole planet, we're doomed. And the planet is an entire system of things. It's not just, you know, one thing here, one thing there. You know, like if somebody dies from, you know, systemic kidney failure, they die from that. One part of their body isn't working, and boop, their whole organism is gone. You know, and like, this is why I just sit there, you know, like doing these things, these, you know, having these people come out and think that, you know, just so they can make a penny or maybe 100 pennies. You know, but the thing is it just breaks my heart. It's so stupid.
But remember, remember what that economist told me in D.C. Remember, the profit used to be on the 8th decimal point. Now it's on the 16th, whatever that means. But the guy was like a highfalutin Ph.D. economist. So, you know, and so we really are talking about a penny or less than a penny in many instances.
It's like the shadow of a shadow.
And you know, you know what, I guess you would call me what, a Mexicophile?
Mexicophile.
I love the ancient culture of Mesoamerica. I have so much reverence and fascination for it. And from, when I look and I consider, now first of all, when he got his first view standing on the mountain and looking down into the Valley of Mexico, when Cortez first laid eyes on the ring of cities there around Lake Texcoco, and the cities were the Texcoco and Tenochtitlan and Tlacopan, when he first laid eyes on them, he was staring in you know, country mouse wonder, because his white ass had never seen anything like that before in all of his existence. Not even in the Moorish grandeur and splendor of what had been Moorish Spain, but was quickly being destroyed by the white Reconquista.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing he could come up with was, it is like Venice. Because with the canals and everything. But what he was looking at was the largest city in the world, Albert. The largest city in the world. And here's the really wild thing. It became the largest city in the world without a horse, without cattle, without sheep, without any of the diseases that come from those animals that just routinely spread through white European populations, without the wheel. I mean, they had wheels on their toys for their children and stuff. It became the largest city in the world without bronze. And it did it, Albert, in no more than 250 years. How long did it take Venice to get Venice's size? How long did it take London or Paris to become their size? Avignon, Rome, Athens. The Mexica people did it in 250 years. And they had running water and flush toilets. and the whole thing was sustainable, and the valley was ringed by trees, and fresh water was everywhere, and there were fish and fowl. They didn't need cattle and goats and all those filthy things. They had everything they needed. And they did it in 250 years. And they were sustainable. They took care of their waste products. They used everything of everything. In that 250 years, they came to control an area that went from the northern desert to the Guatemalan border.
Yep.
And along comes Whitey and ruins it. Because there are no more trees on those slopes on the mountains around the Valley of Mexico. There's no more Lake Texcoco. They filled it in with filth and excrement. And so what we see here is that the beauty that was that area, that region, got destroyed, well, in 12 more years, it'll be exactly 500 years. Roughly twice the amount of time it took Tenochtitlan, Texcoco, and Tlacopan to become the largest city in the world. And now it's the largest city in the world again. But it's filthy. And it's sickening. And now, thanks to American corporate greed, we outsource our diseases to them again. You know, when Albert, is there a little, you know, and I say this as a white guy.
Uh-huh.
When is there going to be a little white guy accounting? When do we actually do a little white guy navel gazing and start asking, you know, have we got this right? Because there's been a jillion sustainable societies, and every time we touch them, they're destroyed.
Yeah.
Sorry, rant off. Oh. My bad. Yeah, rant.
Yeah. Hey, it was beautiful, beautiful. You know, symbolism. You may well look at it as symbolism as well. You know, I mean, maybe some people don't think it means anything, but I think symbols are important, and you know, they play on a part of our psyche. You know, back in those days when those people had that city, you know, this feathered serpent was a one-dimensional being. You know, it was feathered and it was a serpent, and that was a symbolism between, you know, the eagle and the snake being mundane, the physical reality, and the eagle in the sky being part of the spirit, and then being combined as one. Well, if you look at the symbolism of white Mexico, it would be what? The eagle fighting the snake. Right, so they got spirit and the land that, you know, at war. You know, I mean, the thing is the beautiful thing is, you know, war is not really sustainable over very long periods of time. You know, and it, you know, fire does tend to burn itself out. You know, so we do have that to look forward to, and I think people like you and everybody who listens to the horn and people who talk to those people that listen to the horn, you know, and so far, so on and so forth, you know, and everybody on the Common Dreams, great article, by the way, once again, you know, everybody that's on these progressive sites and everything else like that, you know, we are asking about sustainability. We're going to have Star Trek, Bob. It's happening. We're going to have it because there's no other choice. You know, we can't continue with this crap. We can't continue with mountaintop removal and everything that follows.
I understand and agree with everything you're saying, Albert. But remember, going back to that Dean Baker article at Truthout, and he didn't specifically mention this. This was a little riff that I went off on my own. But basically, what finally happened and what may save Chrysler is the fact that we didn't outsource the American workers' jobs. We outsourced the executives, and we're going to get some fiat executives in there who actually know how to run a car company. Now, I know that may be laughable to some people, but they're a lot more likely to be capable than the guy that just ran it into the ground. Well, what we need is a car that gets less mileage. That's what we need. You know, that kind of, we outsourced that. And but remember, you know, that this we act like or we see it's portrayed in the for-profit media as if what happened to Chrysler was somehow just a series of catastrophic events that all came together in a perfect economic corporate management storm that just didn't work out. Cerberus Holdings you know, you can get in, but you can't get out.
Yeah.
Multi-headed dog or some such won't let you out of hell.
Mm-hmm.
Cerberus Holdings meant for all of this to happen.
Oh, yeah.
And basically what Cerberus Holdings got out of it was they got the cost it took them to buy Chrysler from Mercedes. So that they're flush again, and you know what? It's still a very good day in the corner office with the solid wood door on it that says Mr. Quayle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, but that's the thing, you know. We got to stop this cannibalism. Because that's what, you know, that's what these guys are, you know, these hedge funds. You know, we got to stop this stuff. You know, Bob, you know, I don't care who takes over Chrysler. We're running out of oil. You know, this world has a finite supply of it. Like it or not, we have a finite supply of coal. We're running out of these things, you know. I mean, so if we don't start getting serious about getting sustainable, you know, getting sustainable is going to get serious about us. And, you know, we're done. I mean, you know, so... Yeah, you know, I actually applaud that. I wish they would have lost. I hope they did. They probably did lose face because they didn't get a 30% return. You know how those guys like 30% or more or 60%.
Yeah.
They cannibalize.
Yeah, that Madoff money.
Yeah, exactly. You know, so yeah, good. You know, I hope this just like the Carlyle Group. They're gone now too. So, yeah, we have that to, you know, be thankful for, and hopefully Z will be gone, and all these guys, all this, you know, you got the tough guys with the guns, and then the tough guys with the calculators, and their 16th of a decimal point. 16th of a decimal point.
Doesn't that just make you want to scream?
It just wipes my mind. It doesn't, I mean, I can contemplate fusion of hydrogen atoms and helium atoms more than I can figure that out. That doesn't make any sense at all. I mean, my goodness, that's just unbelievable. But, you know, that's, you know, and I think, I hope we're getting smarter. I hope people are, you know, now that the, what the hell is this? You know, I don't watch TV. The correct me if I'm wrong, but does the old ball guy from the big bouncer ball guy from Jerry Springer, he has his own show now? My goodness, TV is really just scraping the bottom of the barrel. People, turn that crap off. My God, it's nothing but commercials.
I mean, just bring back Bozo the Clown and have done with it. That's all these are. These are all clown shows.
Oh, it's just, you know, but, you know, at the same time, you know, it's like all about, it's all these products that, you know, are killing us. You know, we're killing ourselves with this stuff. I mean, you know, bacon's delicious. Don't get me wrong. I eat it. But, you know, I try to at least figure out where I'm getting it from. I like it to be within a certain mile area radius. And anybody who, you know, comes to business will know, you know, I try to get it from my local butcher or what have you. We have local pig farms and they're at least they get to run around in grass. But if I can't afford it, I go without it. I mean, I just do. You know, I make.
You don't have a choice.
Exactly. I mean, that's what's beautiful. Did you see that Monsanto crying and all the other, the Midwest Association for Crop Life, you know, which, where they sell them petrochemicals. They're all crying because the Obama's talking about making an organic garden, but they technically couldn't say it was certified organic because the soil has been fertilized within 3 years with a chemical fertilizer. So what they're doing is they're doing organic practices, which in my mind is okay. I mean, you know, what do you got to do? You got to wait for that, you know, nitrogen salts and potassium salts to get dissolved or used up or whatever in one way or another, and eventually they'll become organic. But, you know, did you see that? They freaked out.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Because she had this garden and all this stuff. Listen, people, you know what? There's nothing but everybody knows. You know, candy, you know, the Skittles. You know, there's a reason they taste like fruit. And there's a reason candy tastes like fruit, because it's supposed to mimic fruit. It's not supposed to replace fruit. It's supposed to attain what fruit, you know, is. But it never actually matches a nice wrap.
Yeah, it's all platonic.
Yeah, but I mean, you
fruitness.
Know, fruitness. I mean, a nice ripe mango. I mean, come on, Bob. That's like, for me, forget it. I mean, you give me a mango tree to live in, boy, I am never coming down. I love a mango. My goodness, they're just unbelievable. Every taste in the flowers.
Mangoes, bananas, and avocados, and I'm a happy man.
Oh, absolutely. But, you know, there's a lot to be said about asparagus and a lot to be said about a lot of things. And, you know, I've addressed on this before, but, you know, Americans, we got to start learning how to cook again. You know, how do you cook an asparagus? Very, very gently, okay? But at the same time, you know.
Practice, you know, yeah.
Practice, exactly. And asparagus is good for you. You might not make your urine smell too good, but it's really good for you. It's got the vitamins and the nutrients, and these are the things that we need. We talk about health care in this country. My God, people, start eating less, you know, cannibalistic pigs that, you know, and start eating more freaking vegetables grown in your yard. You know, stop wasting all your time, you know, mowing your freaking lawn and running a weed whacker around when you can sit there and plant your whole yard. Make everything you look out your window, there's something you can go out there and eat. You know, do these things. I mean, come on, you got to supplement. We got to sit here and figure out local solutions to these bigger problems. You know, and it does my heart good, because when I tell you that, you know, we're running out of petroleum, you know what that says? I mean, it's such a short little statement, but it's saying a whole lot. Like, if we run out of petroleum, and if we did this before people started to realize that we can use organic methods to get conventional yields, you know, before we knew that, when you would say, hey, we're running out of oil, that means that before oil existed, there were about 1 billion people on the planet. Well, now we got 6.5-7 billion. Well, that means we're going to have to downsize, and that means billions of people dead from starvation. You know, and that's a scary, horrible thing to think about. You know, when you sit there and you think, when it comes down to the, you know, facts of the matter, did it matter if you got box row, you know, box tickets at Yankee Stadium for $800,000, or did you had clean food and water? What counts more?
I'll take the clean food and water for $1,000, Alex.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, and that's what's important here. As I, you know, when we sit here and look at this world, you know, when it starts burning, what's important is what we really need to be taken care of. So, you know, when I say that we're running out of oil, you know, think about that. Now we have organic methods in order to do that. Well, that takes a little bit of weight off our shoulders. And, you know, we start talking about energy and geothermal, and then we would, you mentioned something with Luke before about invading Iceland. Well, that would get us to invade Iceland. They got a lot of geothermal easily accessible. They're the Saudi Arabia of geothermal. But anyway.
Well, you know, aren't we kind of filthy with it out in Yellowstone?
Absolutely. And you know what? Not for nothing. This is another thing I just got to say, and this might sound a little crackpot loony or whatever, but you know what? Yellowstone isn't a national park. It's a freaking super volcano that if it goes off, we're done. Done. Goodbye, goodbye, done. West Virginia, where Bob is sitting right now, will be knee-deep in ash, okay? And my mother, who lives out in the panhandle of Idaho with the neo-Nazis, I don't know why, but she does. She thinks it's beautiful, but whatever. She will be vaporized, okay? Now, this is a super volcano. Now, I don't know if this is, you know, not for nothing, but maybe if we sap a little bit of the heat away, because you notice that if anybody's been paying attention to this, yeah, I know, they hype it on Discovery Channel. They hype everything on Discovery Channel. But
disaster now.
Oh, and if you were to touch the sun with your bare hands, it would atomize you, and the pain would be unbearable. They always like to make it like that.
God, you're so right.
Right?
Next on Discovery.
It would crush you into tiny little pieces. Yes, like all that. It would turn you into spaghetti. Anyway, that's great. Now I understand science, Ma. Anyway, when we sit here and, you know, we look at these things, what was I just yapping on about? I freaking forgot. Bob, you got me.
Super volcano.
Yeah, we got a little left. Sorry. Anyway, so you got the super volcano. Well, what if we sap a little bit of that, you know? Yeah, all right, there's deer that live there, there's bear that live there, whatever. You know what? They're pretty water formations. All right, it's a geyser. You know what? Cap it. Cap it. It ain't going to hurt nothing. It might help us. We might be able to have, I mean, man, there's got to be so much power in that freaking super volcano that's calderas, you know, 500 miles long or wide or whatever it is. There's got to be so much power in there we could power the United States with some steam. I mean, it's got to be possible. And you know what? that would be something that I would go take my kids to see. Right now, taking 2 5-year-olds to see water that's 800 degrees splashing to the sky with wooden rickety things as the ground moves up and down 10 feet or whatever, and the trees are dying because their roots are getting cooked. Nah, I'll pass. But, hey, to see the, you know, the geothermal electricity generation center of the United States, how we're actually being sustainable and making sense, you bet. I'd take my kids to see that. I would. You know, just like, you know, you take them to see the Golden Gate Bridge or any other technological, you know, marvel that, you know, that solves some solutions and, you know, doesn't cause as many problems as, you know, I mean, you know what I'm saying, relieving some problems and pressure and all that stuff.
Yeah.
That's what we need to do to the planet. All right. Oh, boy. It's, you know, swine flu and this and everything else. You know, and I hope these things are like, you know, rattling the cage to people to think about just changing the way we've been doing things. You know, because it's, you know, swine flu and flus and pandemics happen. But, you know, the pandemic of 1918 and 19, you know, was because it was filthy conditions, you know. I mean, people didn't have as much running water and and they were living so closer together because petroleum just started.
And information could not keep up with the spread of the disease.
Exactly. And now, yeah, you see, and now we can boom, 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 boom and hit it fast. But, well, hell. You know, if your house keeps burning down because you keep smoking in bed, maybe you should stop smoking in bed.
Yeah, and forgive me, this is my paranoid little moment, Albert.
Okay.
But it, you know, they're as the world is still ramping up its response to the Smithfield flu, Mexico is ramping theirs down. Apparently, it's sort of minimizing, settling down. Mm. Did I read that somewhere earlier today? And I can't help but think that somewhere in the halls of corporate America, if it turns out that someone's got a handle on this, that we've got a handle on this flu strain, I can't help but think that somewhere in the halls of corporate America, there's somebody going, damn it, they caught us. You know, Donald Rumsfeld's going, damn it, because, of course, he's a massive shareholder in the company that makes Tamiflu.
Yes, he is, and NutraSweet. Sorry.
That's okay. No, I understand.
Balls in cold water. I'm just saying, Bob Rumsfeld, hell, Bob, I'll let you know.
And just think, he's going to shuffle off this mortal coil and go to his long home and leave all those shares to the next generation of rummies. See, that's the problem, isn't it?
Well, hey, everybody knows you learn more by listening to Rush Limbaugh than you do by taking math and science and that kind of liberty.
Oh, that sissy stuff. Yeah. Math and science.
Filthy, filthy. All right, Brother Bob.
Brother Albert, this has been a wonderful way to get the week started.
All right, brother. You take care, and we'll chat later, and give everybody my love, and be safe on your trip.
I certainly will. Hope you'll be tuning in, maybe with a question or two for Ms. Kucinich.
Oh, I love her. All right.
All right.
I'll talk to you later.
Later, Albert.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. The Sage of Southwest Wisconsin, that's our buddy Albert. 23 minutes after 7 p.m. here on the East Coast. And I would submit that it is probably time for a wee bit of a break. You know, just for the heck of it, just to provide a sort of transitional continuity, if you will. And with that in mind, we will take a little bit of a break and come back. You're listening to America's listener-supported liberal voice. You're listening to The Horn. Is the number. Toll free. On your nickel, 304-658-3333. Email rolls into bobkincaid@gmail.com. It's all that easy.
Now I don't know. Under me, I don't.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance, and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
We are exactly halfway through tonight's edition of Head On. I am, of course, Bob. Just Bob. Just friends. Your comments, your concerns, the things that have you screaming at the speaker box are, of course, always at the top of the list where the program is concerned. You know the phone number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, Head On, or on your nickel, 304-658-3333. That's all easily found at headonradionetwork.com on the top banner there. Easy, 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 easy. Email bobkincaid@gmail.com, bobkincaid@gmail.com. Now, where do we go from here? I think Horn Intern Junior Grade Ferg is taking the night off for it. Got to learn to tell the boss when you're going to do that. But anyway. Where do we go from here? You know, there's one that just sort of leapt off the page at me. Like I said, this could very easily be prayer meeting night. Oh, so easily. But it's 2 days ahead of time, so we won't treat it like a full-on prayer meeting. However, yeah, there's a couple here that just sort of beg to be addressed. This is one of them. You didn't know it. And it's probably not true, but Samuel Joseph Weasel Booker Bocker Booger, Joe the Not a Plumber, Joe the Scab, is a devout Bible-believing Christian. This guy, tax cheat, among other things, this guy, who's not a plumber, sat down for an interview with, go figure, you know, why Christianity Today? Christianity Today? Him? That hate-filled goon? Yeah, really. And, Christianity Today put the following question to him. In the last month, same-sex marriage has become legal in Iowa and Vermont. What do you think about same-sex marriage at a state level? Why is Christianity Today asking this question? Never mind. That's Samuel Joseph Weasel Woozle Wuzzle Wurzel Becker Booger Beaker answered as follows. At a state level, it's up to them. I don't want it to be a federal thing. No, we wouldn't want federal. Oh dear, it's going to be impossible to get through this. We wouldn't want it to be a federal thing, seeing how the rights in question are federal constitutional rights guaranteed under the federal, you know, Constitution. Equal protection of the laws and all of that stuff, but, you know, who's counting? I don't want the federal thing. I personally still think it's wrong. No, Joe, dang it, there's that word problem. All the time got these wingnut, repig-licking gas bags wandering around talking about what they're thinking, when in fact what they're doing is believing. And then on our side, liberals, progressives, Democrats, decent human beings, we do the opposite thing because we want to be gentle and we don't want to, force our opinions on anyone except me. I want to force my opinions. Take it! We say, for instance, we liberals will say, I believe the sun rises in the east. No! There goes Bob setting the straw man. It's just an example. We know the sun rises in the east. Joe the not a plumber, weasel, booker, bagger, Samuel, who's this weasel, woozle? He believes the sun rises in the east because Jesus is doing military presses with the sun every morning. See the difference? I personally think it's still wrong. I personally still think it's wrong. I personally still think it's wrong. No, you believe it's wrong. There is nothing wrong about it if you get around the semi-literate babblings of a questionably civilized group of people from, 3,000 years ago who were baffled by wheelbarrows and spent a lot of time, picking fleas and mice and stuff off of each other. I mean, that just happens when you live in a desert and you're semi-nomadic people. But it just is. But he goes on. This is going to be a chore. People don't understand the dictionary. Huh? It's the dictionary. People don't understand the Rand McNally Road Atlas. Huh? People don't understand the encyclopedia. People don't understand the dictionary. It's called queer. Queer means strange and unusual. It's not like a slur, like you'd call a white person a honky or something like that. God's pretty explicit in what we're supposed to do, what man and woman are for. Yeah, I gotta give you that one, Joe. Sam, whatever the hell your name is. God is pretty explicit. I mean, there's some real explicit passages in there, like where the daughters get the daddy drunk and then they have sex with him, and when Saul gets all wroth with David because he's done perverted Jonathan. There's some explicit stuff. Yep. What man and woman are for? That's right. Daughters is for getting their daddies liquored up and jumping their bones. It's all over the Old Testament. Nasty old thing. And what brothers are for? Brothers are for slaying other brothers. God's pretty explicit about that. Or, depending on which version you're reading, throwing your brother into a pit and then selling him off to slave traders to carry him off to Egypt. God's pretty explicit about that. Queer means strange and unusual. Well, I guess that means you're queer. Because you are a strange and unusual specimen of something attempting to be a human being, Joe Woozel, Weasel, Wurzel, Watzel, Hoozel. Damn. Joe, I got to tell you, you're almost a cartoon character.
They're black,
they're brown,
they're up,
they're down,
they're in,
they're out,
they're all above,
they're far,
they're near,
they're gone,
they're here,
they're quick and slick,
they're insincere.
Beware, beware, be a very wary bear. A heffalumpaloozle, he's very confusal. A heffalumpaloozle's very sly.
Fly,
fly.
They come in ones and twosles, but if they so choosles, before your eyes you'll see them multiply.
Why?
They're extraordinary, so better be wary, because they come in every shape and size. If funny's what you covet, you'll find that they love it, because they'll guzzle up the thing you prize. Beware, beware, be a very wary bear.
They're near,
they're gone,
they're here,
they're quick and slick,
they're insincere.
Beware,
Yeah, yes, indeed, yes, indeed. He's a woozle. And I suppose, and him being a repiglick and all, their mascot is a heffalump. Oh, brother. This is, and see, that's not the end of the quote. There's more, and I'm just kind of trying to steel myself to deal with the rest of it. What man and woman are for. Now, this is theology according to a woozle. They're here, they're there, they're insincere. Now, at the same time, we're supposed to love everybody and accept people and preach against the sins. Well, if you recall, and there, you know, the archives are still there at whiterosesociety.org, and you can go and have a look. Peter Godbold, in great patient detail, peeled the hypocrisy of love the sinner, hate the sin, peeled it like a grape. And that is what Joe the Woozle is referring to. Oh, no, but we're not there. We're supposed to love everybody and accept people and preach against the sins. So he understands that that's what he's supposed to do, love everybody and accept people and preach against the sins. But loving everybody and accepting people comes before the preaching part, at least according to the gospel, according to Woozle, Joe. But he goes on, I've had some friends that are actually homosexual. And I mean, they know where I stand. Is it a wide stance, Joe? Just asking. And they know that I wouldn't have them anywhere near my children. Well, fair is fair, Joe. I wouldn't allow you anywhere near mine. Some of your weird-ass right-wing nuttery might rub off on them. Next thing you know, they'll be walking around talking about supply-side economics and how it's okay to for the rich to let everything trickle down to the poor. Just trickle on the poor all day and all night. I've had some friends that are actually homosexual, and I mean they know where I stand, and they know that I wouldn't have them anywhere near my children, but at the same time, they're people, and they're going to do their thing. And what thing is it that they're going to do? Love each other, Joe? And loving each other is somehow potentially damaging to your children because you want them to grow up just like you and have a piss-poor education and a piss-poor life lived in quiet desperation and marry some woman that will come to hate their guts as much as they hate the woman's guts and have a loveless marriage and little children that they will pass that on through generation upon generation ad infinitum. Is that what you're talking about you want for your youngins there, Sam, Joe, whatever your name is? So to recap, because I don't want to put too fine a point on it, it's okay for him to call people who have a different sexual orientation than him queer, but he doesn't comprehend the fact that to a person who is homosexual, that his practices are as queer to them as his are. So why bother with the word? Why not just just ask. Not like call a white person a honky or something. Yeah, because that's, Joe is a repiglickin, or Sam, or whatever his name is. And the first thing that came to mind when he was thinking of a slur was to call a white person a honky. None of the other slurs came to his mind because as a right-winger, you've got to understand right-wingers, you know, and the Republican Party being what the Republican Party is, that is a rapidly contracting, hardcore, little cancerous knot of old Confederates, racists, Klansmen, generally pasty-faced, doughy white people. They feel put upon. They feel like they're the ones who are really the victims of intolerance in this country. Because even though they don't exist, they have to be, you know, they have to be, because they have to be careful, because you never, they never know when they're going to show up. And you know, liberals only, progressives only, conservatives need not apply. So after delivering this sort of ex cathedra encomium, in which he explained the dictionary definition of queer. Here's a sentence. "'Tis a queer river," he said, as it lapped at his thighs. Just as an example. Now, having explained that people don't understand the dictionary, you know, this is the same kind of juvenile logic that I used to hear when I was a kid, when my fourth grade teacher would say, "Johnny, don't use the word ain't. It isn't proper English." And remember, they were trying to teach proper English to little Southern children, so, you know, it was one foot uphill in a bucket anyway. And the retort would be, "But ain't's in the dictionary." The dictionary is not a moral arbiter of proper language usage. It is merely a list of words. Now, I don't have one handy, but I would hazard a guess that that most vile of racial slurs, the N-word, is probably in the Oxford Dictionary of the English Language. Well, that's Oxford. Well, it probably ain't in Daniel Webster's dictionary. Don't send the email. I know. It's just a list of words. That's all. Handy pronunciation guides, etymology, where words came from. For instance, the German fricken, to strike, I don't know. Queer's in the dictionary, that means it's all right to call people that. Is knuckle dragger in the dictionary, Joe? Because I'm pretty sure I'd feel comfortable calling you that. Is brain dead in the dictionary, Joe? How about psychopath? Is that in the dictionary? Oh, it's not only in the dictionary, Joe, Sam, whatever your name is, Woozle. It's also in the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual, 4th edition. And I'm pretty sure it applies to you. Why? Well, not for the screed that I've shared with you, but for what went on later in the article. Because, remember, this is in Christianity Today. Christianity Today goes on and asks him, well, Joe, Mr. whatever your name is, the whatever you ain't. Ain't's in the dictionary, by the way. Do you have any plans to run for public office? And after he scratches his stubbly little dome, and you can hear the interviewer can hear the echoing that's taking place, he responds that he doesn't have any plans for public office right now. Why? Well, I suspect the real answer, as is always the case with most political office seeking in the United States, has something to do with money. Because the way our system is structured right now, it takes a vast amount of money to run for office. But that's okay. There is a vast amount of money in the vast right wing. And they'll pay perfectly good money to, you know, the Joe, Sam, Weasel, the Woozles of the world to get them into office. The Michelle Bachmans. Oh, I got some Michelle Bachman audio for you. The Michelle Bachmans, the Marsha Blackburns, the Jim Demented's, the Inhofe's, and the, dear God, Jeff Sessions of Alabama is going to be the ranking Republican member of the Senate Judiciary Committee. No, I'm not kidding. That's right. That's right, America. Sit tight. Hold on to your seats. The junior senator from Alabama, a man who once declared that, "Well, I used to think the Klan was pretty cool till I found out they smoked the dope." That is going to be the ranking member of the Senate Judiciary Committee, passing on Supreme Court, Circuit Appeals Court, Federal Court, magistrates, all those nominations that will come that way from the Obama administration are going to be held in judgment by a guy who thought the Klan was cool until he found out some Klansmen smoked the marijuana. Jeff Sessions, no, really. And so the vast right wing is more than tickled to have lunatics like that in office, including Joe the Woozle. But instead of saying, well, you know, I don't have the money to run for office right now, it is, after all, an interview with Christianity Today, Joe Woozle, remember, they're insincere. They're in, they're out, they're all about. Now, I'd say Joe's probably in, though, not out. But they're insincere. Joe Woozle insincerely answers, not, I ain't got no money. Or, voters in my district would have to be crazier than a sprayed roach to send me to Washington, but then again, there's Marsha Blackburn, there's Larry Craig. I'd say I got a shot! No, none of that. He's interviewing with Christianity Today, so his answer is, God hasn't said, Joe, I want you to run. Joe, I'm speaking as a friend now. Because as a liberal, I care about you, buddy. And if you're having moments where God is talking to you and you're hearing God's voice in your head, well, Joe, you need to get help. Because that means you're nuts! Yet not just a little bit, Joe. Great big nuts. Huge howling symptoms of insanity that you could drive a truck through sideways. You know, sold America, that kind of crazy. This is one of those moments when I, much to my chagrin, am going to have to put my faith in God. That God will not, in fact, say, Joe, I want you to run. That God will say something instead like, Joe, I want you to go and build a cabin in the woods and live in it and never come out. That's what I want you to do, Joe. This is God speaking. Joe, this is God speaking. Wait a minute. That sounds like something. Attention, George Jetson. No, that's not God either. I need God to just not tell him he needs him to run for anything. You listening? Of course you're not. God hasn't said, Joe, I want you to run. I feel more important to just encourage people to get involved one way or another. If I can inspire some leaders, that would be great. I don't know if I want to be a leader. You don't know if you want a bunch of journalists looking at your taxes. Or the fact that you're not a plumber. You know, if you were listening to the program Thursday night, I think it was, you heard our buddy Rick Smith call in from PA talking about the taking down a peg that they had subjected Joe the Woozle to there when he brought his anti-employee free choice crusade to Harrisburg. He brought a voting machine with him, but wouldn't let anybody vote. The irony is... Yeah, again, semi-tractor, sideways, skidding through, that broad. But, yeah, so Joe gives this interview to Christianity Today. And at the same time that he's doing that, something else is being found. And sadly, it's not some crazy-ass right-winger declaring what the usage of the word queer is because it's in the dictionary. Nope. Sadly not. No, this time, much to my chagrin, it's the Obama administration. You know, they've gotten caught lately. And they're playing fun with websites. Last week, a number of websites pointed out that they had taken off the strong language about repealing "Don't Ask, Don't Tell," and now something stronger has gone back up since they got busted. Well, they've been busted again. Somebody needs to talk to the admin or whatever of the White House website, because somebody's playing footsie with the text. Okay, as late as April, and what I'm talking about is this: as late as April 28th, WhiteHouse.gov contained language about the Defense of Marriage Act that read as follows: support full civil unions and federal rights for LGBT couples. President Obama supports full civil unions that give same-sex couples legal rights and privileges equal to those of married couples. Obama also believes we need to repeal the Defense of Marriage Act and enact legislation that would ensure that the 1,100-plus federal legal rights and benefits currently provided on the basis of marital status are extended to same-sex couples in civil unions and other legally recognized unions. These rights and benefits include emergency rights, employment benefits, and property rights. Anybody got a problem with that? Because I don't. All of that seems eminently rational and reasonable and, dare I say it, sensible. Well, there's only one problem. It's gone. It took a little trip down the memory hole. Just gone. What do you mean, Bob? Well, the website, I mean, that was a big old mouthful of words, right? Well, the website now says the following. He, meaning Barack Obama, supports full civil unions and federal rights for LGBT couples and opposes a constitutional ban on same-sex marriage. They made the changes on the 30th day of April, Thursday. He has said things on the campaign trail like, I, for a very long time, have been interested in repeal of DOMA. He wrote an open letter to the LGBT community that contained the following words during the campaign. Unlike Senator Clinton, I support the complete repeal of the Defense of Marriage Act, a position I've held since before arriving in the U.S. Senate. While some say we should repeal only part of the law, I believe we should get rid of that statute altogether. Federal law should not discriminate in any way against gay and lesbian couples, which is precisely what DOMA does. Now it's been reduced to, he supports full civil unions and federal rights for LGBT couples and opposes a constitutional ban on same-sex marriage. Isn't that good enough for you people? So you see what kind of an uphill battle people who are interested in the rights of other human beings have. We don't just have to fight the weirdos on the right wing. You know, my God, when you cite the dictionary for anything other than the textual meaning of a word, you've really reached the bottom of the barrel. But that's what Joe Wuzel did. We got to fight that. But then, on our own side of the aisle, we have to fight the milquetoast brigade, constantly endeavoring to water down anything that is good and strong and sort of in the right wing's face, you know, because we're running for re-election already. Didn't you know that? Yeah. frustrating, to say the very least. So we are smack dab on top of hour number three on its way, the Labor Radio News. Also on the way, should you so choose, your thoughts, your ideas, your opinions, your take on what's important today via the telephone device, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. I emphasis on listener-supported. This is activist radio. This is The Horn.
Well, she looked up peach in the dress she made when she was still a mama's little girl. And when she walked down the aisle, everybody smiled at her innocence and curls. And when the preacher said, is there anyone here got a reason why they shouldn't wear? I should have stuck up my hand. I should have got up and stand.
Listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. Workers and their unions gathered Friday in Chicago at the Haymarket Monument to honor the significance and sacrifice of those who died in the struggle for the eight-hour day. On this day in 1886, a labor rally supporting the strike at McCormick Harvesting for the eight-hour day ended in bloodshed. Police charged into labor activists, a bomb was thrown at them, and police opened fire on the crowd of activists. Many people were killed and wounded. In the immediate aftermath, workers were rounded up and harshly treated. Eight Haymarket labor activists were tried, and four were executed. The AFL-CIO's Ross Hyman added a commemorative plaque to the Haymarket Monument in Chicago.
We join our sisters and brothers from Chicago and Colombia and Iraq and all over the world at one of the most sacred sites for working people everywhere, the Chicago Haymarket Monument. Because we believe in solidarity with workers everywhere, we're proud that the AFL-CIO now has a plaque at the place where May Day itself, the International Day for Workers, was born. As long as working people struggle for what is right and fair, they'll tell the story of Haymarket.
Armando Robles, president of UE Local 1110 that occupied the Republic Windows factory in the successful Chicago sit-down last year, said that the Haymarket workers and labor activists who followed them inspired and empowered workers worldwide.
They made history when they give their lives to change the world, and not only in the United States, in the whole world. And 1937, the fleece workers, the auto workers, they take the factory and show the world. And thanks God. God bless the workers all over the world.
With most states facing budget shortfalls, governors have been asking employees to take unpaid furloughs to help lighten the budget losses. Jesse Russell reports.
In many of those states, such as California, the unions representing workers have fought to preserve those days, arguing that they amount to a pay cut. In New Hampshire on Friday, the State Employees Association introduced a counterproposal to the governor's suggestion that workers take 12 unpaid furlough days. The union is asking the state to back a plan that would allow for voluntary furloughs, and the union's proposal asks the state to allow workers who take the furlough days to keep their seniority and benefits. The union additionally asked that saved money from worker furloughs be placed in a special account that would show how many jobs are saved by workers making such a sacrifice. New Hampshire is the most recent state to consider furloughs. In North Carolina last week, it was announced workers would be asked to take 10 hours of flexible time off between June and December. Colorado, New York, and Maryland have all proposed 5 furlough days, while California has asked workers to take 2 furlough days per month.
The California Nurses Association is calling on Congress to allocate $1.5 billion to combat the swine flu virus. The nation's largest organization of registered nurses says that broader national action is needed for containment of the virus and prevention of a broader swine flu pandemic. You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Yes, indeed. Hour number three, and a reminder again. The tribe and I will be on the road Thursday, heading down to Institute, West Virginia, for the Seneca 2 lecture series, where we will broadcast live the presentation by Elizabeth Kucinich. And you will have your chance to ask your questions of Mrs. Kucinich as well. We'll be monitoring the chat room. We will be monitoring email. And your questions will get answered. This Thursday evening on the horn, on the road to Institute West Virginia and the campus, the lovely campus of West Virginia State University, the Seneca 2 Lecture Series, with whom I am very proud to have the horn affiliated. As it stands now, it looks like around the 1st of June, I'll be on the road again, this time in the company of Guy James. We will be in Washington, D.C. for Take Back America. And, you know, you've heard Guy broadcast from that event before. I've never had a chance to work with him at that particular event. I'm looking forward to it. Hopefully everything works out. But I got to tell you, it's going to be a dodgy, there's going to be a dicey proposition. There's gas to be paid for and a vehicle to be fixed enough to get me up the road. It's just that simple. So in addition to the regular bills and monthly needs that we have here, that's a big part of it, too. And some things coming on, coming up further into the summer that I think you will find highly exciting. Well, let's put it this way. If the winds blow in the right direction and everything works out and we have the money to get there, the Horn will be the exclusive streaming audio content provider for Netroots Nation. If. And frankly, all those ifs are predicated upon your willingness to help keep this going. We just had a generous contribution come in just a few minutes ago, and I want to send out thanks for that. Among other things, well, there was no... let me just tell you. I mean, this is just how things work. You know that Ben Birch is trying to get a new computer for what he does at WhiteRoseSociety.org. We've told you about that. It is also... last night, I was bummed out. Sunday nights for me are the beginning of the week, and the person who begins the week is John Fox. And the program All Foxed Up. Live conversation radio begins on Sunday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Got a note from John saying that his old computer had finally shuffled off this digital coil, so to speak. And had gone on to its reward, I guess, which ultimately will be a landfill in China. Nah, John wouldn't let that happen. John will dispose of properly. But anyway, and I told John, you know, depending on what happens with support for the network, that I will do everything in my power to make sure that he has what he needs to get things going again, because Sunday nights without John Fox just ain't the right kind of, see, ain't. It's in the dictionary! Just aren't what they ought to be. So, yeah, we will live. By the way, John reminds me, live blogging from the Seneca 2 lecture. It should be a lot of fun. So, you know, just so you'll know, there's a lot that gets done with your contributions to keeping the Horn going. And now more than ever, there are more things to do. It is a constant struggle. It's a constant struggle because there are no corporate advertisers. We don't have that base of corporatism that the right wing have, because corporations are largely right wing in the first place. And for that reason, they support what they perceive to be their agenda. Now, you know, how somebody like Flush Flimball, who revels in the kind of non-regulatory schemes that have destroyed corporation after corporation after corporation in this country, can be perceived to be their kind of guy, I don't know. But then again, maybe that's also part of why we've got the problems in the American business community that we have. Not the sharpest knives in the drawer, if you know what I mean. Our good friend Dr. Bill O'Brien, who you once heard here on the network, sent me an article today from Boston.com, from Boston Globe. An interview by Jeff Jacoby with Michael Harrison. Michael Harrison being the founder and publisher of Talkers Magazine. Talkers Magazine is supposedly the go-to publication for everything about the talk radio format. Every year they put out their Heavy 100, the annual ranking of 100 most important talk show hosts in America. Year in and year out, it has a way of being Flush Flimball. The slant of the magazine is clearly right-wing. And this article at Boston.com, The Future of Talk Radio by Jeff Jacoby, published today, has some. It's clear that Michael Harrison of Talkers has some right-wing slant. He says, nobody in radio has a following that comes anywhere near a majority of Americans. Limbaugh gets about a 5%, 6% share of people listening to the radio at any given time when he's on, and he's only on 3 hours a day. The idea that radio is dominated by conservatives or by Rush Limbaugh is not correct. No, Mr. Harrison, you are not correct. It is dominated. Right-wing radios get 50,000-watt blowtorches, liberal conversation, if it can get on terrestrial buggy whip radio at all, gets on, you know, a 500-watt flickering candle flame. One of the most progressive liberal cities in the United States is Washington, D.C. There is not a single license holder in Washington, D.C. who will program liberal talk anymore. The one that was there is gone and was barely audible, barely receivable in the first place. But in this article, I'm not nearly as concerned with what Michael Harrison's ideological slant is, because it is what it is, and it ain't nothing else. But with his comments regarding radio itself, because they seem to echo something that I and others on the horn have been saying for a long time. Early in the interview, he says, the baby boomers grew up with radio. Radio personalities meant something in their life. They know how to use a radio. And Jeff Jacoby asks, doesn't everybody? And he says, no. Many kids don't even have radios. The biggest problem facing radio is that the younger generation doesn't think of it as an institutional component of day-to-day life. And if people stop thinking of radio that way, then what's the value of owning a license to broadcast? That's why radio is in trouble. Not so much. The reason radio is in trouble is because it is a bunch of corporate garbage. Because of the stuff that these corporate entities are pumping over the public's airwaves is tripe, and people know it. I mean, how many times in one rotation can you stand to hear the latest Britney Spears dribble? Yeah, he knows what it is. I don't. No. It's all right. It's all right. The question is, and you know, interspersed with, you know, ads, and more ads. What used to draw people to radio was the fact that radio was done by people in their communities. People that you might see out in the store who had a direct connection with the communities in which they broadcast. That's gone. The Clear Channels and the Salems and the Sinclairs of the world have made sure of that. They have sort of McDonaldized radio so that the same corporate pap that dribbles out of a speaker in Florida is the same corporate pap dribbling out of a speaker in Nebraska.
And you'll never hear that guy you'll never see that guy in the grocery store who sounds like he's throwing up the whole time he's talking.
You'll never see him, because he's sitting in a corporate studio in God knows where, wherever the home is of the corporate entity that owns the license. That is why radio is dying. Radio is dying because of the music itself. If you want to hear something fun, hip, cool, whatever, you ain't going to hear it
on Contemporary Hits Hot Hit Radio.
It's not there. Focus grouped crap is. Stuff that's been overproduced is. so-called music that involves technological gizmos that take a person who can't carry a tune in a bucket and make it so they can is. The good stuff isn't. With the exception of low-power FM, community radio, and some campus radio. That's why radio's dying. Radio's dying because if you take half of the potential audience out there and tell and say, well, we're not going to program anything but for you people, and instead feed them a steady diet of, you know, that life support system for a haircut, the Hannity job, or Bortz, or, you know, a drug-addled junk fiend like Limbaugh. If that's what you give them, people are going to turn away from it, and they are turning away in droves. I know this to be a fact because you're here. And you're not just here right now, 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. Eastern Time. You're here whenever you want to listen to the podcast. You listen at your convenience. If you're really burned up, you wait a little bit and you call into the show once in a while, even if you listen at your own choosing. You listen to the stream that we put up at iTunes Radio and that rolls at headonradionetwork.com and goes 24/7. There's always something on. You listen at your convenience. You have taken your freedom back, and you're doing it via the computer and via the radio that's on the computer. So, that's why radio is in trouble. It's not because young kids don't have radios. Young kids have radios and know that that the radio that's being broadcast is being programmed by old farts and geezers. Honest to God, how many times, yeah, how many times can you hear Journey or whatever on classic rock radio? How many times can you hear that? I mean, most of classic rock is embedded in my brain. All I have to do is think about it, and I hear it inside my skull. But toward the end of the interview is something that provided me, and I really appreciate Dr. Bill sending this along. The last question. Well, wait a minute. Wait. Just so you can put Michael Harrison in perspective, there are some wonderful people in radio and some terrible people. I'm a radio guy, but I've learned not to judge the quality of human beings by their media image or by whether you agree with them politically. Ho, ho, ho. Question, who are some of those wonderful radio people? You're going to love this. Sean Hannity is one of the nicest people in the world. And Alan Colmes, his former partner, is one of the finest people I've ever known. One is considered an arch conservative and one is liberal, but they're both really stand-up guys. I judge people by how they go out of their way to help their fellow broadcaster. Jim Bohannon, who's nationally syndicated by Westwood One, is wonderful. Jim Bohannon's another wingnut. Dr. Laura Schlesinger, who is very controversial, is personally a really caring, deeply humane person, which is interesting because her reputation is the opposite. Tom Hartman, Mike Malloy, Stephanie Miller, Ed Schultz. Yeah, I know, Ed. Anybody? I guess none of them are one of the nicest people in the world, like Sean, the chicken crap Hannity, who volunteered to be waterboarded to support the troops but has chickened out since. One of the nicest people in the world. Stand up, guys. So the last question, though, the last question in this interview is the one that, really stood out for me, and the one that Dr. Bill told me to have a look at. Question from Jeff Jacoby. How many good years does talk radio have left? Michael Harrison's answer. AM/FM radio has about 5 good years left, if that. And what we consider to be radio today will be on the Internet. And the Internet websites will be media stations. The Internet is not only going to change radio, it's going to change humanity. That's how profound this revolution in communication will be. And that is from the man who sits in judgment of every single human being who does talk radio in the world. The arbiter of the Talkers Magazine Heavy 100. But you know what's funny? Here's a guy who says, what we consider radio today will be on the Internet. Now, I haven't looked in a while. I don't know that it's changed. It may have. But for the longest time, you couldn't get on Talkers Magazine's Heavy 100. No matter how much you talked, no matter how long you talked, no matter how long you'd been doing it, no matter how much blood, sweat, and tears you'd poured into the effort, you couldn't get on that damn list unless you were on somebody's terrestrial buggy whip radio station. Hustling by Gold Now ads, and mattresses, and vacuum cleaners that pick up bowling balls, and baldness cures, and the erection nostrums. You couldn't get on the Heavy 100 unless you were part of the corporate machine. I'm not saying I belong on there. I will damn sure say that Guy James belongs on there. Guy James is pro all the way down to his toenails. There's no way that some babbling moonbat from Busted Knuckle belongs on the Heavy 100 and Guy James doesn't. But see, Guy James, like me, like many others, is part of the Internet radio ghetto, and we are not welcome, no matter how much people enjoy us, no matter how much people do to support us, no matter how hard people work to help other people know that we're here. We don't make it onto the Heavy 100, even though the guy who publishes the Heavy 100 says that what we consider radio to be radio today will be on the Internet. Michael Harrison, will be on the Internet. Michael Harrison, it's already on the Internet. It's been on the Internet for 5 years. Live. Real. And working a completely different model that you can't imagine because it's not all sucked up inside corporate America's what thou shalt say and what thou shalt not say and mother may I. The Internet is not only going to change radio, it's going to change humanity. With that, I agree. But I don't agree with the verb tense. It's not going to, it is. I've got the evidence. I get the emails. Emails that are incredibly humbling to me. Telling me what the horn means to you. Telling me that you feel like you would be lost without what the horn is doing. I read those things, and I'm a liberal. Tears come to my eyes. Don't kid yourself. Don't think for an instant that Flush Flimball or the Savage Wiener, you know, I was thinking about his sort of bumper out where it goes, Savage! You know, that really doesn't work as well if it goes, Wiener. So that's why he's Michael Savage. But anyway, don't think for an instant that he or Bortz or Flimball or Hannity ever go home and think about the tremendous gifts that the people who listen to their programs give to them. I'm not talking about money. I'm talking about time. Finite, unreplaceable time. Time that is shared with this and other programs on the horn that takes away from other things you could be doing. And yet this is important enough for you to want to participate in it. It's going to change humanity. You're damn right, Michael Harrison. It already is changing humanity. I'm inspired by the people I hear from. I'm inspired by the energy and the passion that gets shared with me and the rest of the folks here on the horn. I'm moved by it. I'm changed by it. I'm a better person for it. Hannity, Flimball, Bortz, Savage, Ingram. You know what those clowns get? Those clowns don't get what I get. Those clowns don't get that transformational experience. Those clowns don't get to sit down and wonder in abject awe at the magic of the energy that people bring to them. All they get is a corporate paycheck. And for them, as shallow as they are, that's enough. Do you think for an instant that Sean Hannity would do this for what anybody on the horn does it for? Hell no. Their bottom line is the bottom line in right-wing radio. It's something wildly different here. By the way, our buddy David in Tennessee is reminding me that Talker magazine guy, Michael Harrison, is also the guy that thinks Jay Severin, real name Jimmy Severino, ranks in the mid-50s on the Heavy 100. Jay Severin? Jay Severin? Oh, yeah, Jay Severin. You know Jay Severin. He said, doing a quick internet search. Yeah, this Jay Severin.
This is one of the Heavy 100. This is one of the hot talkers in America. This is one of America's great talk radio hosts.
We're talking about illegal immigration. So now in addition to venereal disease and the other leading exports of Mexico, women with mustaches and VD, now we have swine flu. But now it's too late to do anything at the borders because, of course, we didn't do anything. So now it's too late to do anything. And when we are the magnet for primitives around the world, and it's not the primitives' fault, by the way. I'm not blaming them for being primitives. I'm merely observing they are primitives.
Really? This kind of babblesome garbage makes you the Talkers magazine's 50-something on their Heavy 100? Thanks, Michael Harrison. I'll stay the hell off your list. I think more of myself than to be even remotely associated with a piece of human excrement like Jay Severin. My God. Because, you know, not only, I know this is crazy, But not only is this is the Smithfield flu, not only is it not about immigrants, illegal, whatever, not only is it not about primitives, not only is it about not about VD or Mexican women with mustaches, as this slimy gut bucket says. No. His job as a right-wing thug is to point people in his listening direction in the other direction, in his listening audience, from the other direction where the real blame lies. Not with peasants, not with campesinos, but with corporatists. Corporatists who build humongous lagoons filled with matter that in the article that I mentioned the other night from Rolling Stone called Boss Hog, a person who falls in de facto cannot be saved. Even if you pull them out alive, what they've been immersed in will be enough to kill them because of how toxic the material is in those vast little inland oceans of excrement, excrescence, poison, toxin, filth, and just about every other nightmarish substance known to the human mind. Jay Severin's job is to make sure that nobody listening to him takes a hard look at Smithfield Meats. Jay Severin's job is to blame poor people, and for that, for excreting on poor people, for excreting on working people, Jay Severin gets a paycheck, and Jay Severin gets a listing as a member of the Heavy 100.
And when you scoop up some of the world's lowest of primitives in poor Mexico and drop it down in the middle of the United States, poor, without skills, without language, not sure our culture, not sure our hygiene, haven't been vaccinated. Look at all the things we take for granted. It's millions of leeches from a primitive country come here to leech off you. And with it, they are ruining the schools, the hospitals, and a lot of life in America.
Yeah, but what's Smithfield Meats doing to your schools? What's Smithfield Meats doing to your health care? What's Smithfield Meats doing to everything that's good about America? They threatened, they intimidated, they did every rotten thing in the world to the people who, and mostly African Americans and Latinos, who took jobs at their Tar Heel, North Carolina kill plant. 32,000 hogs a day go through there and get slaughtered. Something like that. And get turned into Cumberland Gap brand ham. And Eckrich smoked sausage. And Michael Cudahy and Paula Dean, all conveniently rebranded so as to keep you, the person who's spending your hard-earned money for this stuff, from knowing that they come from toxic swill. What are they doing? What does it do to America's healthcare system when people are insufficiently paid because they aren't union organized and haven't a health care plan and are forced onto the government health care plan? What does it do to America when Walmart pays its workers so poorly? And by the way, they sell a lot of Smithfield stuff, Walmart does. Pay their workers so poorly that they have seminars for their workers, making sure that their workers know how to take advantage of every last nickel of welfare, even though they're fully employed. What does that do to America, Jay Severin? I would submit to you that it does a hell of a lot more and a hell of a lot worse than some desperate individual who wants to come to America and take a low-paying job doing construction and living in a hotel, living, 12 to a hotel room or swabbing toilets. A hell of a lot more. But there's gold in that there in there's gold in that there libel.
Now, at this particular moment in history, they are exporting to us a rather more active form of disease, which is the swine flu. California, and middle-class people are fleeing California in droves to get away from the criminal aliens, as we know. The governor has...
Oh, he's so cute. He can have fun with the language. He calls them criminal aliens. How, how
about the criminal thugs in the corporate boardroom at Smithfield Meats who enable those toxic inland seas? You know, just go find poor people anywhere on the planet. Go find where the poor people are. And you won't have to look very far before you find where the toxic corporate poisoners are. 2.8 billion gallons of toxic sludge does not hang over the roof of Don Blankenship's house. No, it hangs over an elementary school full of poor children. Vast toxic inland seas of pig filth don't sit next to the corporate headquarters or the mansion of the CEO of Smithfield Meats. No, by God, it sits in Mexico, and it sits in Iowa, and it sits in Tar Heel, North Carolina, next to poor people.
One of these days, them poor people gonna rise up, I'm telling you. And it's going to be an ugly, ugly day for the Don Blankenships and the CEO of Smithfield and the CEO of Cerberus. It's going to be ugly, ugly day.
Because maybe, just maybe, the head man there at Smithfield, you know, because they do that pitchforks and torches routine in Mexico. He may just get a daggum bath in his own pig swill. And forgive me, because this is mean, I wouldn't exactly shed a tear if that happened. Mm-mm. Nope. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Alan.
This is Alan.
Yeah, what's up?
Yeah. I'm in my hometown now. I just drove past the 16th Street Baptist Church.
Oh, you're back home.
In Alabama. Yeah. Uh-huh. And I had a relative when I was down here say some kind of remark about... I'm saying that when a black man is president, it'd be when pigs can fly, and then he made some kind of remark about the pig, that flu that's going around, the swine flu.
Mm-hmm.
And my comeback to him was that the last time we had a flu epidemic was when Ford was president. That's what I learned from listening to the Tom Hartman show.
Yeah, not Jimmy Carter like Michelle Bachmann, who was patently crazy, said.
Uh-huh. And also I've heard that the flu, I mean, the way that they raise pigs down in Mexico has something to do with NAFTA and the world, the W2O or something like that, where they make all these pig farms into one or a few big ones instead of having them spread out. And that's one of the things that caused it. Is that what you've been saying? I came in late.
Kinda.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Talking a little bit about that and other things. But go right ahead.
Yeah. And it's Pete Seeger's 90th birthday today.
Huh. Happy birthday, Pete.
Yeah, Pete. Somebody asked him about his career. He said he never even thought about it. He just did what he liked to do in life. That's the way to do it, I guess. Hopefully you enjoy your work. I wish you got more paid for it.
I love my work.
Yeah.
It is the most demanding and most satisfying that I have ever done in every sense except financial.
Uh-huh.
But, yeah.
You educate us all.
Well, I get educated more than I educate, I think. But, yeah, I guess it's a two-way street.
Uh-huh. And I was listening to Democracy Now! Today, and Al Jazeera come out with some article I heard about talking about our U.S. military having proselytizing.
Yeah, I've got that Al Jazeera video here. I didn't get to it. It'll probably most appropriately wind up on Prayer Meeting Wednesday. But yeah, Al Jazeera has done something that, oh gosh, the for-profit media in the United States couldn't be bothered to do. They flat busted a bunch of American soldiers who are out there proselytizing people in Afghanistan, trying to turn them into fundamentalist evangelical Christians.
Mm-hmm. There's also some real good audio I heard on the Democracy Now! Show about a guy proselytizing, a U.S. military guy preaching to other military guys how they should go out and save souls and be like a hound of heaven or something like that. I guess misrepresenting the poem called Hound of Heaven, because it wasn't really about that, I don't think. But sounded like a good article. I need to look it up on the internet.
Yeah, I would say so. And I'm sure probably your best chance for getting the full skinny on this in both instances, go over to just Google up the Military Religious Freedom Foundation. Mikey Weinstein heads that organization, and he keeps a close eye on all of this creeping fundamentalism trying to insinuate itself into the military.
Oh, man, it's pitiful. I went to get a car tag today, and I made sure that my tag does not say, you have a choice in Alabama now. You could choose the tag. It has In God We Trust, and it has a red and white, kind of like a flag background. Or you get one that says Sweet Home Alabama, and it's got like nice colors and blue and stuff. It shows some mountains in the background, and that's what I ordered off the internet. So,
whatever happened to Heart of Dixie?
Yeah, maybe it's on there somewhere. It
used to just be a white tag, little blue border, red heart Alabama, red Heart of Dixie. But yeah, I kind of like Sweet Home Alabama. Nice little sort of indirect homage to my old stomping grounds.
Yeah. I remember a photographer who used to live on the south side, not far from me in Birmingham. His name was Spider Martin. Have you ever heard of him?
Offhand, no. Although.
Spider Martin. It's spelled, like a spider and then Martin.
Mm-hmm.
Look it up on Google. There's a website that shows his photography. And he was a photographer during the Civil Rights Movement, and some of his photography is just absolutely fantastic. He's dead now, but I really like the guy. He's a nice fella. And one time he went out to do a photography shoot about crop dusting in Alabama,
mm-hmm.
and the guy on the crop duster, he didn't have an extra seat. He said, "Well, can you tie a chair up onto the top?" And it was a biplane. So he rode up there on the top. He was a real eccentric fella.
Sounds like a heck of a man. I'm glad you got a chance to meet him. Well, go over there. Go to the Military Religious Freedom Foundation, and Alan, you'll find everything. I haven't seen it, but I just about guarantee you, you'll find everything you'd want to know about it, about the proselytization in the military. That's a great resource. And if you sign up, they'll even send you little email alerts, and they're awful handy to have.
That's always been one of my favorite subjects, because I really think that we need a separation of church and state in this country, because those religious people, I think, are dangerous.
Well, the last 8 years certainly taught us what happens when the religion industry gets the bit in its teeth and gets all married up with government, didn't it?
Yeah.
Not a nice thing by any stretch of the imagination.
Oh, made a mess of it. And now with, in our military, it seems like when we have Democrats running the, supposed to be running everything, we shouldn't have this in the military. It needs to be changed.
I agree.
Because Democrats believe in the separation of church and state, I would think.
That's well, it's hard to even drag them into that because they're afraid of the fundamentalists back home. I've got a story here about that loopy Minnesota Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann using a phony George Washington prayer. It didn't even actually happen, but to attack President Obama.
And Mr. Speaker, likewise, as President Obama insisted a Catholic university cover the image of Christ during the Easter season while he spoke at that school, George Washington, our first president, demonstrated that he was not offended by the image of the risen Christ. In fact, our nation's first president let his views be known quite clearly on his inauguration by a prayer which George Washington himself gave at his inauguration. He said, and I quote, Mr. Speaker,
only problem was he didn't.
Yeah,
but there's never a bad day for going out and trying to use religion to smear someone that you've well, she called him a socialist. She hates Barack Obama. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah, and some people think that George Washington was an atheist. I don't know if there was a such thing as atheist.
No, what he was a deist.
Yeah,
what they called them
a deist.
Called themselves back then was deists. We would call them agnostics now. For instance, the Declaration of Independence contains the phrase "nature and nature's God."
Oh yeah, I love that term.
Because it's a clear delineation away from that sort of angry, psychotic, juvenile delinquent that stalks up and down the Old Testament and runs around smiting people.
I know it. It's just the reason why religion is so violent is because man created religion.
Right. And, well, you know, it's like that bumper sticker that John and Peter and I discussed a long time back when we had a horn section. That bumper sticker that said, "If your God hates the same things you do, he's probably not real."
Oh, I love that. Yeah. Oh, man. Well, I guess I better let you get to your next call or whatever.
All right, Alan, good to hear from you. Glad you're home. How long are you going to be able to stay home?
Till tomorrow.
Oh, mercy. And then where are you off to?
I don't know where I'm off to, but I know I need to get back to work. I spent about $1,000 today paying bills and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
I got me a YMCA membership so I could go to anyone in the country now, so maybe I could keep fit.
Hey, that's a great idea, especially for somebody who travels as much as you do. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, you sit down and pay bills after a while, and it goes away in a hurry, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
Well, good. I'm glad you're home for at least a day or so. Enjoy your day, and stay safe when you get back out on the road, Alan.
All right. Nice talking to you.
Good talking to you. Take care.
Goodbye.
Bye now. Usually out on the road, but home for a brief stint, and then back out again. Our good buddy Alan the trucker. Yeah, let's close with a giggle. Why not? We'll save some of the other stuff I had for another day. But yeah, let's do close. Remember, Michelle Bachmann said, "Our first president, George Washington, insisted on his inauguration day as the first president of this great country that unless the citizens of our country imitate the example of Jesus Christ, that we would not be a happy nation." What, we're all supposed to be executed by the state? I don't understand this woman. What a clear contrast between our first president and our current president. What a twit. What a hate-filled, venomous, poisonous twit. And she's also, however, a moron. Let's not lose sight of that.
Attention, moonbat bloggers, professional victims, and race warlords. Be ready to slide down your fire poles of insanity to misquote, demonize our next speaker. A woman who does, I say, a spectacular job of representing us in Washington, D.C. Please welcome Michelle Bachmann.
Hello, Cleveland.
Wow, that's fun. Okay, and then Michelle gets the microphone. And you just can't pay for this stuff.
During the last 100 days, we have seen an orgy. It would make any local smorgasbord embarrassed if you looked at this spending orgy we've seen in Washington. So it's no surprise.
Huh? We've seen an orgy? You've seen an orgy? Michelle, put your clothes back on, honey. I don't want to see that orgy that you're at. And you're apparently having it at a smorgasbord? What are you, rolling naked in the mashed potatoes? The pickled beets? Ew.
That our national debt is now soaring over $11 trillion. Over $11 trillion. As a matter of fact, last Sunday was National Debt Day. April 26th was National Debt Day. And you know what that means? The government spent its wad by April 26th.
Spent its wad? Spent its... Spent its wad? Now remember. Remember, this is a woman who stands on the floor of the House and says, George Washington insisted on his inauguration day as the first president of this great country that unless the citizens of our country imitate the example of Jesus Christ, that we would not be a happy nation. No, we'd be an unhappy nation having orgies in the green olives, spending our wads at the smorgasbord. Oh, God. I thought it was going to be funny. It's not so funny. And so are you, actively involved in paying her to say that crap. Remember, it's a federal paycheck. She gets paid by all of us, not just by the... See, I think we need a new rule in America. All congressional salaries are paid only by the people in their districts. Because you know what? If some loony-ass district in Minnesota wants to send that batshit crazy woman to Washington, that's their business. Elections have consequences. But making me pay for that? Oh, hell no!
News Ninja Gene. I'm never going to be able to eat shrimp again. Thanks, Bob.
Oh! You! It ain't exactly settling my stomach. Yeah, I've ruined pickled beets for Ferg. So that's the show for tonight. We will certainly have more tomorrow night. Thanks for the 3 hours of your time. And Ferg is absolutely going to spontaneously combust if I don't mention that there's a meteor shower tonight, which he is under the impression he's going to get up in the middle of the night to view, and he's welcome to do so, but I'm kind of doubting it. At any rate, that's the show for tonight. Thanks to Peter Godbold, our IT professional, to John Fox, our chief engineer, host, webmaster, head musician, to Ben Birch, the hardest working man in liberal talk, whiterosesociety.org. And all the hardworking men and women at Coal River Mountain Watch, the hardest working, bravest people I know. Day in and day out, standing uphill, upstream, and upwind, and fighting for all of us, because we're all downstream, downhill, and downwind. Partial thanks to Horn intern junior grade Ferg, who partially helped.
Hey.
And always, 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 Gina. It's all for you.
Yes,
Show. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy!
Years and 3 days, and Agnes and I are still married. We got through the weekend. Hot diggity. Nothing really special going on. Just another quiet weekend on the a quiet weekend on God's Little Acre. And awfully tickled to be starting a brand spanking new week. The first full week of May is upon us. It's acting like spring outside. It was a lovely spring afternoon. All the green. This time of year, the green is just especially green, isn't it? It's bright and it's brilliant and it's inspiring of how green we can make this world if we so choose. And if we only have the will to last one more day longer than the profiteers and the corporate polluters and the mind thugs. It's up to us. That's ours. It's a choice we make. So, let's see. Program note. It's program note time. No, don't go to the lobby and get a Coke. It's time for program notes. Just to let you know, a rare and wonderful opportunity is coming your way this Thursday evening. I'll be traveling with the tribe back down to... Institute, West Virginia. Among other things, not far from the highest concentration of incredibly deadly methyl isocyanate, the same poisons that wiped out Bhopal. But I'll be traveling down there not to go to the Bayer plant at Institute. No, I'll be traveling to Institute, West Virginia to go to the West Virginia State University. There is a little bit of irony in the fact that... in the Kanawha Valley, a traditionally white upper crust private college sits directly across from the state capitol, while a few miles down the river, a traditionally African American institution of higher learning sits next.